Next item on the agenda is Kevin Wade, item number 18-0496. Good morning, Mr. Stagg. And for the commission's attention, the white book in front will be for this specific project. Thank you.
So as the commissioner noted, the white book, you get a whole separate book for this one. The sheets that are loose to the left of your book are protests and letters of support that came in after the book was put together. So they came in on Friday and yesterday. So there are some additional letters of protest and a letter of support. So Mr. Kevin Wade has submitted a joint permit application requesting to place up to 700 floating shellfish cages within a 400 by 600 foot area over the applicant's existing forested planting ground, lease number 17804, which is located within Milford Haven in Matthews County. The application is protested by numerous nearby property owners and other residents of the county. A couple of housekeeping things here. You'll note that this says a request up to 700. If you look at the drawings, which I'll be showing in a moment, it actually contemplates 714. That's because the number in each row was an even number. But we did not advertise it that way because the application, in the language in the initial part of the application, said approximately 700. And when we advertised it, we actually advertised it up to 700. So any approval today would be only for 700 or less, because we didn't advertise for 714.
Okay.
The applicant is aware of that and is okay with it.
Okay.
I understand.
All right. Also, as a matter of housekeeping, before you proceed any further, I believe have a declaration to be made by Mr. Ballard and by Ms. Lusk. Mr. Ballard?
I have been asked to recuse myself from JPA number 18-0496/Kevin Wade by a riparian property owner on Milford Haven based on the grounds that I have a personal interest in this pending application. Pursuant to the State and Local Government Conflict of Interest Acts, I have decided not to recuse myself, and I am making the following declaration as required by Sections 2.2-3112 and 2.2-3114F of the Virginia Code with respect to JPA number 18-0496/Kevin Wade, which is an application before the VMRC to install a 5.5-acre off-the-bottom aquaculture project in public trust waters at or near Milford Haven. This pending application does not solely relate to my personal business or property. However, I am the president of Ballard Fish and Oyster Company. My company is part of the oyster farming profession, and there's a belief by some that members of this profession may be affected by the VMRC's decision in this matter. My company has four pending permit applications before the VMRC for off-the-bottom aquaculture projects. Although each JPA pending before the VMRC stands on its own merits, the oyster farming profession and businesses like mine may indirectly be affected by the decision made in JPA number 18-0496/Kevin Wade. However, I believe that I am able to participate in this manner fairly, objectively, and in the public interest, particularly in light of the fact that each JPA pending before the VMRC stands on its own merits and is evaluated independently. Accordingly, my recusal from this matter is not required under the law, and I will not be recusing myself from JPA number 18-0496/Kevin Wade. I respectfully ask that my foregoing declaration be recorded in the written minutes of this meeting of the VMRC.
So noted, Mr. Ballard. Ms. Lusk?
I would like to make a statement for the record. I am vice president at HM Terry Company, a Klamath Oyster Aquaculture Company in Virginia, and as such, I'm a member of a relatively small group of parties in the state's shellfish aquaculture industry. My company does engage in sales transactions with the applicant. However, I do not believe this precludes me from participating in this discussion in a manner that is fair, objective, and in the public interest. And I will not be recusing myself from this discussion.
So noted. Proceed, Mr. Stagg.
Again, joint permit application from Mr. Wade. So on March 30th of this year, we received the joint permit application requesting to place up to 700 floats within Milford Haven. The area requested is over an existing lease that's owned by the applicant and is offshore of an area of submerged aquatic vegetation closer to the shoreline. Most of the Milford Haven area is leased, as you'll see on this map. You may hear reference today to the hole in the wall, which is in this lower area here, which is access to get to the bay. That is no longer being marked by the Coast Guard. So I think you'll hear that some people that live in these lower areas feel they have to come this way to get to the bay, go through Milford Haven. The application is actually up in Milford Haven in this area. A little closer view, zooming in. The bridge onto the island is just off the slide over here. The lease in question, where the proposed floats are right here. These are all leases or applications, and this is a piece of public ground that extends into Milford Haven. So another little item of housekeeping here. I met with one of the the end of last week. We raised the issue of jurisdiction and state versus federal jurisdiction here. The Army Corps of Engineers is also processing this application for a permit. And Mr. Russell Edwards brought a document. It is in your packet. It's a couple of letters, one to us and one to the Corps. It's item 5276 in your book. After a long discussion with Mr. Edwards, he said he would not be here today, but he pleaded with me to read one paragraph from his letter related to this because he believes it's germane, and I'm going to read it and then ask our counsel if she has any additional comment. So his paragraph says, "The Rivers and Harbors Act, enacted by Congress in 1899, defines the federal government's authority to regulate navigation and other activities in rivers and harbors of the United States. The Act designates and gives authority to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to regulate and enforce the provisions of this important Act. In our constitutional form of government, the laws of the federal government take precedence over related laws that may have been enacted at the state level. Following the rule of law that is normally practiced in our civilized society, I am asking that VMRC Board not take a vote on this pending joint permit application until after VMRC has received the U.S. Army Corps' decision on the subject JPA. This request would be applicable to the VMRC meeting plan for this for today." I'll first say before I turn it over to the council that we act independently of the Corps typically, and we often issue permits before the Corps. Sometimes we issue our permit after the Corps has acted. And with that,
Ms. Block, you got a comment? For the record, this is Kelsey Block, the Attorney General's Office, Commonwealth of Virginia, that serves as our representative to this board. Kelsey.
If the commission decides to issue this permit, it is conditioned on the Army Corps permit also being issued. You need both, but that doesn't mean this one can't be issued before the other one is issued. It just means they can't do anything until they also get the Army Corps permit.
Proceed.
And I'll add that if both permits are issued, the most restrictive permit will apply. So if the Corps' permit is more restrictive than ours, then they have to adhere to this.
Thank you.
There is a federal project channel that enters from the west into Milford Haven, but it's not a dredge channel at the location where this project is being contemplated, and this project is not in the actual federal, not in the channel. So this is zoomed in a little bit closer even. Again, this is the subject lease. This is just a little tag that gets put on it by our database. This is the area of SAD that has been prevalent in the last number of years. The actual request is south of that SAV area.
And for the record, SAV is what?
Submerged aquatic vegetation.
Thank you.
We do have a policy to not put new leases or to not permit projects over SAV unless for permits, there's some mitigation or compensation.
Commissioner Bowman?
But we don't
Ma'am.
Need...
Sorry, is the blue the channel?
No, that's just a marker that our database puts on, the location of where...
I guess the blue block adjacent to...
That is public
ground. Public ground.
Public ground, okay, thank you, sir.
That is where the deep area is, like, okay. Where that public ground
was.
So the use of cages, floats, and nets for shellfish propagation has resulted in increased public awareness of the leasing of bottomlands and highlighted the necessity for more comprehensive review of both lease applications and permit requests for both on-bottom cages and float aquaculture. Such requests in populated areas raise new issues regarding public trust lands to include user conflicts, property values, aesthetics, navigation impacts, and suitable bottom types. Stewardship of public trust lands while weighing the public and private benefits versus detriments requires a multifaceted review of both shellfish lease applications and permit applications such as this one. Staff does evaluate each protested application on a case-by-case basis, considering all comments received concerning the area being requested. This application was subjected to our normal public interest review and was public noticed. This request has generated well over 100 letters of objection. I believe we're up to 125 to 30. There are some duplications. There are some people that wrote more than one letter, but there is well over 100 individual objections to the application. We also received a smaller number of letters of support, approximately about 10 letters of support of the project. The nature of the protests are varied and include concerns about impacts to navigation, possible impacts to historic resources, which I'll cover a little bit later, submerged aquatic vegetation concerns, view shed issues, property value impacts, noise and smell impacts, potential adverse impacts to dolphins related to the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and other non-jurisdictional issues concerning increased traffic and issues related to the use of the adjoining upland property of the applicant. We believe those last items are outside the jurisdiction of DMRC. I'll try to address the other issues as we go through. The letters of support, I note that Milford Haven, the Milford Haven area and much of the shoreline to include the applicant's highland property has historically supported maritime activities related to both fishing, crabbing, and shellfish harvest and production. So we'll go through the actual application here. This is the area that was designated in the original application we received. It's a 400 by 600 foot area, entirely within the lease of Mr. Wade. It was slightly modified. We received a private pier application from an adjoining property owner, immediately adjoining property owner to Mr. Wade's property, that was going to, and I'll show you a better drawing of this in a minute, but it was going to come out near this area here. The applicant slightly modified the location, and this was a revised location. There's been another revision since then, which I'll show you in a second. This is the typical cross-section with the original application showing how the floats would be secured. They're proposing to use screw anchors originally with anchor marker lines on the end with a crab top type float. The perimeter itself on four of the corners would also be marked. I'll show you the marking proposed for that as well. After the application was modified the final time, they sent us revised depth drawings, which these are the most recent. So they're proposing, there's two of these because the way this is configured, there is a sandbar on the inshore side. So it's a little shallower in one area than it is the other. So this first slide shows that in the shallower area that the depth would be between 9 and 10.5 feet between mean and high tide, mean low and mean high. And on the deeper end, it would be between 12 and 13.5 feet. This is the second drawing where the sandbar is more prevalent, and the depths here on the inshore would be approximately 6 feet above mean low water to 7.5 feet, and on the deeper end, between 12 and 13.5 feet. This is what the Oyster Grove float looks like that's being proposed by the applicant. So it has two flotation devices on the top. Shellfish would obviously be in the cage, and they would be submerged under the water. This is the cage inverted. The float is now on the ground. These can be inverted like this in the field for cleaning and defouling, but typically they'd be turned in the opposite direction with obviously the shellfish in the water. So this is a drawing showing the general array plan. You'll see 17 rows. the spacing, and this is where you see the 715, so it, this would be 700. They would have to reduce the number, reduce it down to 700 or less if you were to approve it as advertised. Again, each corner would have what they're calling a regulatory buoy. I'll show you an example of what they're proposing, which we think is acceptable. Again, if they use screw anchors, and I'll address that issue in a second, this is the type of anchor they'll use. I'll have a picture of it. So this is the final revised location. So what they ended up doing was pivoting mostly this western side further to the south to avoid the any interference with this proposed pier that would come out to approximately here. So this is about 500 feet from the shore out to where the end of the pier would be located. We did have conversations with the applicant and the landowner who wants to build a pier. We believe they're all in agreement now. We did issue a no permit necessary for this letter. The leaseholder did not contest putting the lease pier across their lease related to production issues. This would still leave a gap between the end of the pier and the northwesternmost buoy marking where the array would be. This is the facility of the applicant, Island Seafood. They have an existing onshore facility and a pier that they use to tend their gear. So during the review process with the Army Corps suggested that they might prefer that they use a anchor weight instead of a screw anchor to the applicant. So this drawing reflects that potential. The Army Corps, my understanding in my most recent conversations with them, is that they are reviewing this using both methods. So it's kind of an either or. They prefer, I believe, the concrete method. The applicant can address that more when they speak. But this drawing reflects that they are now processing it for both. We are processing it for both as well. So they could use anchor weights, or they could use screw anchors if approved, if you approve it that way. I tended to favor the screw anchors because this is just another obstruction above the bottom. This is an example of the type of concrete apparatus that the applicant has located that could be used if they use a concrete. Obviously, it's pretty intuitive. This would sit on the bottom, and a cable would attach to this up to the float apparatus. For the screw anchor, the same thing. The screw anchor would obviously be screwed into the bottom with a coupler here like this. And these are the type of markers that would be proposed on the corners. They could say danger, or they could say aquaculture floats, but we do recommend that at a minimum of four of those be placed around the perimeter if the project is approved. So a little more about the protest. Again, there does not appear to be any submerged aquatic vegetation in the footprint this is being proposed. And since it's been moved a little further to the south, it's even farther away from the area of submerged aquatic vegetation you saw earlier near the shore. It is not located in a designated channel area and has been modified, again, as I noted, to accommodate a private pier of the adjacent landowner to the north. The Army Corps of Engineers and the U.S. Coast Guard, we did contact the U.S. Coast Guard, sent them requested comments, and we did not receive any. I contacted the Army Corps to try to see if they had gotten any comments last week. They said they had also requested comments from the Coast Guard and not received them as well. So I asked them, could they follow up? Later that day, I did get an email from the Corps. They did indicate they had spoken to the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard had reviewed the project and had issued a report. No one got it. The Corps didn't get it, and I didn't get it. So the Corps requested it. Apparently, it takes a week to 10 days to get it, even though it was already written. I don't really understand why. But the Coast Guard officer did tell the Corps that basically here's what it's going to say, that they don't deem this project to be an issue with navigation. Their only recommendation was that if approved by any regulatory authority, that boaters just should use caution when navigating around the structures. So that the Coast Guard's comments on the project. The issue of dolphins has also been raised by a number of the protestants, including an attorney representing a number of the protestants. I did contact the Corps about that issue as well to see if they were coordinating with NOAA, which would be the federal agency that would oversee the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Again, I got a statement back from the Corps that basically said that was deemed not to be an issue, that they were proceeding with their permit, and that NOAA had not given them any comments to the contrary. VIMS also weighed in on this. I asked VIMS for comments in general on this project, and they did provide them. They are in your packet of additional information because the comments came in yesterday, and you may want to hear directly from them. They did make some extensive comments about the dolphin issue. You want that to occur now, or?
I'll wait until it's raised, and then if it's raised, I'll let them address it from their perspective. Thank you, though.
So dolphins are covered under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, but they are not an endangered species. Another issue that's been raised by the protestants is historic resources. So this site is a pretty important site from the Battle of Cricket Hill. There was a battle here with British ships that were scuttled. So a number of people have raised the issue that there might be historic resources here. And we did contact the Virginia Department of Historic Resources for their comments. They did write us a letter and basically indicated that it was not within an area of concern for them. I know that the applicant's attorney recontacted the Department of Historic Resources with what they considered additional information and requested that they comment. I recontacted the Department of Historic Resources and asked if they wanted to make any further comment. To this date, I've received no new information from the Department of Historic Resources. Adjacent property impacts, your council can maybe better couch you on how much that impacts. We do take that into consideration. These floats will be about 500 feet plus offshore, directly offshore of the applicant and the neighbor has the pier. There is a series of condos on the shoreline, which I'm going to go back to this photo real quickly. A number of people that live along the shoreline are protesting the project, but this is the condo, and I have a number of letters from owners of within the condos. And so the picture that I'm going to go back to in just a second, I took standing right on this property corner of the condos, looking out towards where the project would be. So their concerns are that, you know, the activity here will cause noise and could adversely affect their property values. So again, I'm standing on a shoreline right at the edge of the property of the condo association. The project would be approximately in this area here. There's a number of piers between the project and the shoreline. This is the Kevin Wade pier, but generally it would be in this area just beyond the horizon of this pier. And it'd be about 900 to, at the closest place to the condo is about 900 feet. And, of course, the other end of the property is even further than that.
And how high above ground are these structures when they're floating, or above water when they're floating?
When they're deployed, basically what you're going to see is the float part. All the cage will be underwater because it'll have oysters in it.
So what is
some of this will be a slight part of this, the float area will be submerged, but a lot of this will be above the water.
How tall are they?
The dimensions, I think. So there's your dimensions right there.
Huh?
58 inches wide, 42 deep, 9.5 inches high, and 24 inches for the complete float.
Okay.
Commissioner Bivens?
Yes, I'm sorry. Ms. Everett?
So is that called the bullet nose? Is that 11.5 inches high, but again, a little bit will be underwater.
I think the applicant can probably address the exact dimensions. It is in the application document.
Okay.
But I want it on the record.
So we believe the floats, when deployed, will be above the water line. However, they are painted black, and typically the water is somewhat opaque at most times of the day from a distance, and that they tend to somewhat blend into the water color. Certainly, you'll be able to see them.
People, you'll have your opportunity to comment, and the laughter during the course of the presentation serves no real useful purpose. Thank you.
I will note that you may see later some pictures of these similar type apparatus deployed in apparent sort of disarray. They can be deployed that way. I believe the applicant has proposed here a pretty robust, you saw his outline. They're going to be in a straight line. I think you'll hear that he kind of prides himself in the way he deploys these, that they're uniform. They won't be scattered all around. So they will actually be in rows, which you could navigate in between, probably with a small boat, because there is spacing in between them. And they have to navigate in between them to actually work them. So as proposed, we don't believe that they'll just be scattered in nature. They will be in a regimen-type array. So having said that, some navigation immediately where these floats are will definitely be affected. You will not be able to go straight through this area anymore because there will be a row of floats if deployed. But again, you can navigate around them, and in a small boat, particularly non-motorized, you should be able to go in between each row. The applicant has proposed, and we definitely support, the marking of the float area with warning buoys on all sides, and they have proposed again to mark them on all four corners with a floating danger type buoy to alert boaters. So while staff acknowledges the concerns raised by the protestants, the use of both cage and floating apparatus represent an efficient and manageable method to grow shellfish for the ever-increasing shellfish market in Virginia and beyond. Conflicts will continue to occur when such methods are requested in areas similar to Milford Haven that have both a history of maritime activity, use, and development of the adjoining highland properties for residential use. For this application, staff believes the placement of up to 700 floats in an area measuring 400 by 600 feet at the proposed location constitutes a reasonable use of public trust lands. Accordingly, after evaluating the merits of the project and after considering all the factors contained in the Code of Virginia 28.2-1205A of the Code of Virginia, staff therefore recommends approval of the request to replace up to 700 floats within Milford Haven as requested by the applicant. For such an approval, staff also recommends the permit contain the following conditions. We recommend there be a surety bond in the amount of $10,500 to cover the cost of removal of all 700 floats in the event of a failure. And that cost is based on $15 per device. The permit shall not be issued until we have assurance that the surety bond has been issued. An annual royalty in the amount of $1,200 based on the bold outline of the entire aquaculture structures, which is 240,000 square feet at a rate of a half a cent per square foot, which is our standard rate for this type of activity. The permit and authorization to retain the structures shall be valid for a period of 5 years. After 5 years, the permittee may request the commission reevaluate the project and seek authorization to continue the activity for an additional period of time. The public shall not be excluded from any areas not physically occupied by the actual structures. The permittee shall maintain all structures and shall remove all structures within 5 days upon them falling into a state of disrepair or upon cessation of their use as aquaculture structures. The structures must be marked and located in accordance with 28.2607 of the Code of Virginia and the Virginia Marine Resources Regulation 4 VAC 229030. And we are requiring that they mark the four corners as they proposed. Should unforeseen conflicts arise, the Commission may elect to hold an additional public hearing, at which time they may elect to revoke the permit and direct removal of any or all of the authorized floats. All commercial aquaculture activities conducted in association with the structures authorized herein shall be conducted in compliance with relevant VMRC and Department of Health regulations. The permittee shall be required to remove or relocate any of the structures which are determined to be in the way of any approved shoreline projects requested by any adjacent upland property owner within their riparian area. that, I will take any questions.
Members of the commission have questions for Mr. Stagg, Mr. Ballard.
Did you have a picture, could you go back to, of the overall area with the footprint? Do you have anything more zoomed out than what we just saw?
That's about as zoomed out as I got. But that's okay. This is all of Milford Haven, all of the wall.
Yeah, with the overlay of the 400. I'm trying to get a sense of how much of that waterway is this array taking up.
Maybe the next picture.
And I don't have it superimposed on this one, but it's basically an area right here. A rectangle right in that area there. I mean, I didn't do a percentage of what this would be, a 400 by 600 foot within the entire Milford Haven, but it's a pretty small percentage.
Further questions?
It's 5.5 acres. If you want an analogy, the super block, which is the parking lot across the street, is almost exactly the size of the proposed array. So that, from around the sidewalk, if you go right around the sidewalk, that block across the street, where you park.
I asked Ben actually that question to give me an idea of, just so I could see what 5.5 acres is, and as a registered land surveyor, that's what he provided.
We'll work to figure out. I didn't survey it, but I did some mapping by aerial photography, which is pretty accurate, and that lot is actually right at 5.5 acres. So. Yeah.
Further questions, Mr. Tankard.
So, you know, a lot of the protestants that I'm sensitive to mention navigation, and I'm trying to. Ms. Everett mentioned channel, and many people mentioned channel. So I want to understand where the federal channel that you talked about is located.
The federal channel comes in right in this area, and then there is a marker right in this area here, and then there's another marker way down here. But the deepest area basically goes something like this on this side and something like this on this side. Pretty deep in the center, and the outer edge of this is relatively deep, where the outer, right near the public ground where they're going to come to, is relatively deep. It is navigable there. I'm sure boats navigate right there now, but they don't have to. I mean, it's as deep or deeper over in this area. So this is generally, and people may contest this when they get up, but I believe generally, you know, the fastest way to get through here is to follow the deep area at low tide, and just generally that sort of footprint.
Okay, thank you.
Further, Ms. Everett?
The BIMS letter suggests they grow or maintain records of observations of dolphins and other protected species in and around the farm. Did staff consider adding that as a condition, or didn't know if you all looked at that?
Well, I can let them speak for themselves. I spoke to the Army Corps, and I've also read the lawyer provided a lot of documentation with the study. So there really are no studies in the United States relevant to this topic, for dolphins particularly. The studies that have been done overseas, New Zealand and other places. There's still not much data about this type of apparatus related to dolphins. There's some studies that would indicate mussel long lines, which are hanging lines, which just sort of float. There's a potential for entanglement with those because they're not really taut or tied to anything.
Ben?
I would be happy for VIMS to cover that topic. I think they did.
As would I at this juncture, if that would be okay with you. Dr. Luckenbach? Thanks, Ben. Just hang tight there. State your name for the record, please. You've been previously sworn, and your title.
Mark Luckenbach, Virginia Institute of Marine Science, Associate Dean of Research and Advisory Services.
Could you respond to Ms. Everett's concerns and questions?
So, Ben covered it. Right. We did a pretty extensive literature review. There isn't a lot of literature, but there's a lot more than the 8 publications cited. I spared you in your letter and cited only what I thought were the 8 most relevant ones globally. The issue with dolphins and cetaceans in general that have been recorded to become entangled in or impacted direct impact by aquaculture lines, have been loose lines that are sort of flopping that they can really get entangled in. With the best clear data coming from true mussel culture, but even there, big mussel lines when they're when they've got a lot of big mussels on them, are heavy and they don't sway. And in fact, most growers will anchor those at the bottom. But this, in some areas, stat collector lines, and you see them move around and they're so loose, you can get entangled in them. The general issue with entanglement with cetaceans in general, again, a few whales have been affected more, and those are obviously in deeper places. The only real direct impacts are associated with entanglement of loose lines. There, a study cited in the letter that I showed to you has shown at least one really quite clearly, I think, on a pearl oyster farm in New Zealand that dolphins were displaced. They used to use the area until the well, they used the whole area, but when a pearl farm went into the area, they just simply didn't go in at the moment. So that's where it stands. There's a lot of other bits and pieces, anecdotal things that are in the literature. I've cited what I think are the most relevant. The comment that I put in there about that, if permitted, the grower, I didn't suggest a study or any of that. You'd be foolish to be a farmer and not keep an eye on what's in and around your structures. That's just a comment that it would be to their benefit to observe interactions. Certainly didn't propose a study. I don't know if that answers your question. Yeah.
Just as a follow-up, then, sir, in all due respect, do you believe that this project poses a hazard to mammals pursuant to the Marine Mammal Protection Act?
We don't think it poses a direct hazard.
Mm-hmm.
If the limited studies are true, and again, the amount of activity, and I don't know how to relate the amount of activity to an oyster farm here to a pearl oyster farm in New Zealand, if oyster farming may have, with cages and structures, may have the potential to cause them to have to not use an area. So if we're at an endangered species, in some interpretations, a taking is just to simply to displace where that organism was at. So we don't have a lot of evidence of that. Again, we don't have any for this particular type of oyster gear. I think if this was a really, really extensive thing, we had real concerns that we were displacing them far and wide. The data that exists from other aquaculture, from some mussel aquaculture, from some finfish aquaculture, is dolphins will go in and around the gear, particularly finfish aquaculture, because there's potential food in there. So that at least the data there don't suggest that it's the direct impact as much as they're likely to spend less time there than in that particular footprint than they may have before.
Thank you. Any follow-up questions, members of the commission? Thank you, Dr. Luckenbach. Further questions of Mr. Stagg? Ben, I do have one. The screw anchor versus the block. I think I might know the answer, but I don't want to read into it. What did the Corps indicate what their concerns? I mean, I presume that a block is certainly more certain to be stable than a screw anchor. Was that their concern, or did they indicate?
I never really got a full sense of why they were preferring this method. The applicant has interacted with them quite a bit, I think, related to this topic.
Okay.
They may have possibly the disturbance of putting a screw anchor in, but it seems like a minimal disturbance for these small screw anchors put into the bottom.
Okay. All right, thank you. Further questions of Mr. Stagg? Thank you, Ben. Is the applicant present or represented? Okay, Mr. Wade?
Do you need any of the pictures that I have?
Thank you. All right, sir, if you'll raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, serve you God?
I did.
Could you state your name for the record?
Kevin Wade.
And your residence?
Deltaville, Virginia.
Okay, you have 10 minutes, sir. Please proceed.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
BMRC Commission staff. I am Kevin Wade. I am the owner of J&W Seafood in Deltaville and have been since I started the company in 1982. I've been in the oyster business since 1982, processing oysters. We have Lee's Bottom where we dredge oysters, and we work every day and plant shells and do our reporting, and have for ever since we were lucky to have the oysters that came back, and we've enjoyed that very much. My relationship with Glenn's Island goes back to my childhood, really, in the seafood business. Kind of what got me. My parents were in the seafood restaurant business, and they used a lot of seafood. And I was, as a kid, rode with my dad, and we sourced seafood from Gloucester to Matthews to Middlesex to Northern Neck to Hampton Roads. And that kind of segued me into the seafood business, out of the restaurant business. I became a part of the property, which is now Island Seafood, that the staff referred to, where our application is pending. Back in the late 90s, I actually purchased the property in 2004. We just kept up the tradition of what went on there, shucking oysters, picking crabs, packing fish. We've cooked crabs, picked crabs in season for years. We actually, at one time, we cooked conch. We did that for a while. So we pretty much done it all there. A lot more robust back then than we do now, back in the day. As demand required, we shucked oysters, not year-round, but seasonally. But we shucked a pretty good amount of them for being on that property, and maybe pick crabs. I think we've been good neighbors. We've been good citizens. We've been good corporate citizens. During my years in business, both at my plant in Middlesex and Matthews, we've never had a formal complaint of any kind about anything that I'm aware of. Never had a neighbor say, you know, you smell bad or you look bad or anything like that. And we're proud of that. And that's been our model from day one. We never planned to be, even though we've been in it for 30-some years, we're still the young guys on the block when you compare to other seafood processing here in the Commonwealth. There's many more people. There's two, three, four generations. I'm the one, the only one. My family didn't start. I started that business. Our motto has always been quality over quantity. We don't pick the most crabs. We don't pick the most crab meat, but I think we do pick the best crab meat, and I do think we shuck some of the best oysters. Consistent quality and safety has been our project from day one. Again, we've been great corporate citizens. We love this industry. We're proud of our facilities. We're proud of our reputation. And we're proud of the people that we've worked with, both on the independent commercial watermen and the wonderful employees that we've had for many, many years. I mentioned that our topic has always been food safety. We produce a ready-to-eat product every day. It goes from our processing plant to the consumer directly. It can all be consumed raw, or the cooked crab meat that we produce is ready to eat right out of the can. So food safety has always been our priority. We're proud that we've had an excellent reputation with the governing food safety organizations such as the Virginia Shellfish Sanitation, the Food and Drug Administration, and we're one of very few facilities in the state. We're the only crab processing plant in the state, and one of a few oyster processing plants in the state. It carries an actual third-party food safety audit. It's an international, it's the Global Food Safety Initiative that is recognized all over the world for food safety so that our practices meet so we can export. And a lot of we got into this program as requested by some of our customers. Over the years, we've kind of set ourselves, we think, above the bar with some other companies here in Virginia to service the higher end, more food safety conscious, and very reputable grocery store chains, food service organizations, as well as independent food service chains all over the country.
Okay, Mr. Wade, can we get to the project and tell me why you think? Yes,
okay,
sir.
Yeah, I'm sorry, sir.
That's okay.
So why agriculture? For us, agriculture, certainly in this time of processing oysters, we have seen the decline in demand for shuck meat product that people would condensely fry or prepare value addedly. And that's worried us for several years. We've watched that decline. At the same time, we've seen a huge increase in demand of the deep cup, pristine half shell oysters that are consumed on the half shell market. That's what drove us kind of to looking at agriculture. The other fact of it is that carefully managed agriculture oranges is a 52-week-a-year operation. We can supply our customers 52 weeks out of the year, and that intrigued us, and that's why we looked into it. Today, 50% of the seafood that's consumed in this country is agriculture. That's a data. That's a fact. Unfortunately, 92% of that comes from overseas out of this country. We hope to help change that a little bit with the agriculture operation. Again, the other part of it was we've got some watermen. In fact, I have some here with me today that have joined us in our adventure into working the agriculture, that's our operational people, that work past future watermen. And now this gives them an alternative to the conventional way if they go to market and they sustain themselves. Growing and harvesting oranges, again, it will add full-time and part-time jobs. I guess the big question is why the floating cage in Milford Haven? That's the question. Food safety, again, is their number one priority. These floating cages positioned where they are next to our facility will handle our ready-to-market product. That's their end of the day. When these oysters have been going through the growing process and are sitting there ready to go to market, kind of a wet storage on demand. We're literally 500 feet from that source to our dock, onto our dock, another 400 feet to refrigeration, will give us a premium and ultimate food safety convey 52 weeks out of the year, but more especially during the warm weather months when we are restricted to harvest, and time and temperature is everything. For food safety, for shelf life, the whole nine yards. We also do believe that these cages, and we know they will, produce a premium quality oyster that we believe will be represented to stay very well and could be some of the finest grown in this country and maybe even the world. That's pretty much the food safety and the quality. That's what we've been about our whole life. That's what we are today. That's what we aim to be. Again, water to cold air in literally minutes with this floating cage application should be approved. I have today over here, if I may.
Yes, sir.
We set out a petition in our retail market. Somebody wanted me to take it. So I have here today for the record 464. Signed petitions of people in favor of agriculture and Milford Haven.
Presented. Commission.
I handed up that step.
Can you make it up where I can? Do I hold tall tight?
I'll be on that with you.
That's okay, Ben. That's all right.
So that being said, I think, and we also in your packet, I believe you have a resolution from the Matthews Economic Development Authority also supporting our agriculture project in Matthews County, sir. If I can, Commissioner, I would like to just stand and recognize some of my people with me, my two partners.
Okay, please.
My agriculture, Mr. J.D. Blackwell, Mr. Ben Woodard. Yeah. My field operations team, Mr. Hanley, Jace, Austin, Brandon. I have a couple in the back that work with us, and I think they'd like to say a few words when appropriate.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions? I will say that if there are any technical questions, I would like to refer them to probably one of my partners.
Okay. Well, if there are any technical questions and they're asked by the commission, they'll speak. Who wishes to speak in support of this project? Okay. Would you please stand for me? Those that do, raise your right hands. Solemnly swear the testimony you'll give today be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you. Keep in mind, when you come up, you'll have 3 minutes unless it's questions asked by the commission. Okay? All right. Any questions by members of the commission? Mr. Tankard.
What is your maintenance regime going to look like? Your maintenance regime. Will this look like with regard to this cage, 5.5 acres?
My management of the cages?
Maintenance.
J.D. is in charge of all the integral parts of it, and he can answer that much better. I can. That's okay, Mr. Tankard.
State your name for the record, please.
My name is J.D. Blackwell.
You've been sworn. Proceed.
So when you ask maintenance, I'm not exactly sure what you're referring to, but the
floating cages will all be attached to a rope. Those ropes will be anchored on the seafloor. And I'd like to comment on your earlier question. As far as why Army Corps suggested we use a concrete anchor, that was 100% as a result of the concerns raised by other people about archaeology. They felt that a concrete block sitting on top of the ground, on top of the seafloor, would do less damage to any theoretical or potential ship or something that might be in the ground. So instead of screwing an auger into a boat, they'd rather we sit a block in the mud. That's why that happened. But either way, whether it be a screw auger or a concrete block, the rope will attach then hold to the floats. We'll be out there day in two or three times a week, but day in, day out, all through that day, looking and touching the gear. In this environment, in the sheltered waters of Milford Haven, it's not likely to take much wear, but we'll be there looking at it day in, day out. So we'll see it, and as things wear, we'll be able to replace them. Agitation, that slight vibration, is really the issue with these kind of cages. Subtle motions like this just cause abrasion. Sooner or later, you wear stuff. But because this will be where our oysters sit for the last third of their life, it'll be where they mature and then get shipped to market. We'll be touching it all the time, so we'll see stuff. In terms of the other question of maintenance, like how do we clean them, there'll be different size bags. The bags will come in and out and get cleaned, but the cages themselves won't. They'll sit there just with the float sticking up. I'll answer that question as well. You'll see about 6 to 10 inches. The floats are about 14 inches tall at the most. About a third of that will be in the water when the cage is empty. About half of it will be in the water when the cage is full. So you'll see something like 10 to 6 inches of that black float. So from a distance, it'll be your angle will get pretty small. But the cages will never sit on top and be flipped over. Here in this environment, it doesn't work. At least it's not how I intend to operate the farm. So the cage itself will get a little fouling, but the fouling will fall off because it will change over throughout.
In other words, you're not going to flip it over to desiccate it.
We're not going to flip it over to desiccate. Okay. It's not part of how I operate a farm. So you'll never see that. But the foulings that grow on it, what grows in February or what grows in May or what grows in July changes, and what's there will die and fall off. So the cage itself doesn't really need cleaning. Rare occasion, but we'll knock it off as we touch it. But the bags that hold the oysters, that'll come out, that'll get fouling, that'll go to shore and get cleaned. So those would be how I intend to maintain the lines. We'll visually be inspecting it as just our normal course of daily activities. Most of the fouling issue will be done on land.
Further questions? Ms. Everett?
Just a follow-up question to the height. So I'm looking at 2-13. It's one of the schematics. Cross-sections.
We don't have the benefit of seeing it.
Okay, I'll just read. So when it says for complete float 21 inches high, that's including the cage and the float. Okay, thank you.
Further question? Follow-up, Mr. Tankard.
Follow-up to the cleaning. I just, when you say on land, will that be truly on land? Will that be on dock adjacent?
It appear to be on land.
Okay.
That's something we're debating. There's an area on the property that we recently got zoned commercial so we can clear it, and we intend to store all the bags and stuff back there so that it's completely out of sight.
Out of sight.
Yeah.
Of course, that's up there is out of our jurisdiction,
but that's a
point. Dr. Neal.
The staff recommendation includes a number of conditions, including that the permit, if issued, would only be for 5 years. And during that 5 years, if any unforeseen, we could bring us back and actually revoke the permit at any time. Are you okay with the staff recommendations with those conditions?
Absolutely. I think it's completely reasonable.
Further questions? Mr. Ballard.
Clearly, there's a lot of opposition to the site selection. Can you tell us a little bit more about exactly why you want here and why it's so important to be in this specific location?
I'd love to. Ben, can I get the and I've got some pictures, but I think we can use this. Okay, that's a great picture. If you don't mind, I'm going to step over here for just a second.
Well, we've got a pointer. We're going to have this on the record.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Very good. So if we look at this, the floating cages will sit right here. The reason why we're here is very simple. We're out of a channel. Since we're going to be here, anybody traveling through here can get to any of their piers, and you can still get into Edwards Creek, and you can still get back to this pier. And you'll be able to get to this new proposed pier if that neighbor ever builds it. So we don't think we cause any navigation problem whatsoever. Number two, we are inside of a lease that Kevin already has. One of the issues, as I'm sure you're aware in Virginia, is that almost all the bottom's leased. I mean, literally, it's all leased. So this is Kevin's facility. We want to use this existing commercial, fish-oriented facility. So he owns this. We want to use the refrigerators and packing houses in this pier. So in proximity to this location, this is the only lease that he has in Milford Haven, or at least it was. And so we need to be inside of that because everything else is gone. Back here, there's SAV. Right here would be a dishonest place for us to go because we would interfere with this pier and this guy's boat. So we can't be here because of that pier and boat. We can't be here because of SAV. We can't be really anywhere else because this is the lease that Kevin has. We don't want to be over here because that would interfere with navigation of these people. And we want to be close to this pier for the reasons Kevin said. There are two real reasons to answer that. One, because the last third of these animals' lives will be here and they'll produce a world-class product for Virginia. And secondly, because they're right here, it means that 52 weeks a year, particularly in the warm weather months, will have the highest level of food safety attainable. It'll literally be 15 minutes from this water to this cold room to that refrigerator. And that'll assure us, particularly in the warm weather months, that we know we are doing as much as we can for the safety of this product.
Thank you. Further questions? All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Timer working correctly?
I do 7 minutes separate from the 3 minutes that are already set.
So okay.
3 minutes left, that's when the light will come on.
Okay. Thank you. Who else wishes to be heard in support of this project? Yes, sir. Come forward. I know you as an officer of the court, but in this case, you've been previously sworn?
I did get sworn this morning. Thank you.
State your name for the record, sir.
My name is Brian Plumley. I'm at 4705 Columbus Street, Virginia Beach, Virginia. I'm an attorney, but I'm not here to represent Mr. Wade as an attorney. I'm here as a private citizen. I've supported oyster aquaculture for many, many years. I'm also an appointee, I want to let everyone know, to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission currently. Previously, I was on the VMRC, and before that, I served for 6 years on the Virginia Beach Wetlands Board. Mr. Wade is an experienced waterman, and he has a trained and ready team. And men like Mr. Wade keep our Commonwealth competitive with other states and other nations. That's very important. Virginia could fall behind. So the VMRC has to decide whether we're going to rapidly trade away the fishing rights of the Commonwealth for the right to have an open vista, unobstructed, for the landowner. I worry about this. And I've talked about it before, and I've written about it. I traveled to Matthews County. The seafood industry's footprint there is in all directions. Of the 45 counties of Virginia for which the VMRC keeps fishery landings and dockside values, the small county of Matthews has been near the top. The proposed site is exactly where this work should be performed. It is a very suitable location and a small site. There will be virtually no interference with recreational activity. The site is clear of the channel. Those are important facts. It helps to go and look, and I've been there. I caution the VMRC because it's your duty to regulate this industry. But what power do you have to push back the landowners from the water's edge? Oysters in cages is the future of the industry, and this method is the future. Lower labor and lower costs. The primary complaint is the view. People don't want to see it. But the oysters filter our water, and they do it every day, all day. In the years to come, the people of the Commonwealth will not be grateful if we lose our footing in this industry. But the hammer of the regulations is in your hands. And it's unfortunate that the only nail around are the watermen's livelihoods. This doesn't mean you shouldn't regulate and carefully regulate. You have to. That's your job. But this industry is a win for the Commonwealth. And despite what the landowners believe, this industry will help preserve the ecology of the water.
Can you wrap it up for me, Mr. Plumley? Please?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
The commission is entrusted with the health of the bay and the industry. And that at times, that means you have to swim against the tide. So I ask you to approve this application. I thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Counselor. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Plumley. Who's next wishes to speak?
Yes, sir. Troy Hanley. I've been a commercial fisherman 35 years. I've known Kevin for 35 years.
What was your name again, sir?
Troy Hanley.
Thank you.
And it's just gotten, over the years, harder and harder and harder to make a living with crabs. I've conch-fighted and crabbed, and ain't much I haven't done on the water. And those kind of people that are buying the crabs and buying croakers and spot, they're fading out. And the people buying the half-shell oysters are on the increase all the time. So me and him talked, and we've been friends forever. So we were talking one day, and he talking about starting this and wanting somebody to kind of take care of the in the water stuff. So I pretty well give up everything I had, and we started, I went on work for him. So, and that's just what it is. It looked like it's a thing of the future. I don't see, and the reason for the cages is so you can get them the way you need them for the half shell. If you don't lay them on the bottom, they're just going to grow long and snappy, and they're not going to do what they need to do. So that's pretty much why.
Right.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, sir. Yes, sir. Can you state your name?
My name is Brandon Eames. I have worked on the water since I graduated high school in 2010. Since then, I bought my own boat, own licenses, and I started a family, bought a house. So with that entail, my financial needs have changed. I've crabbed, I've oystered, I've conch potted, I've gill netted, and everything's getting more and more expensive to do, more and more labor that isn't there to do it. And I feel like this is a way to receive a check 52 months, 52 weeks out of the year, and to keep working 52 weeks out of the year. With the crabbing and, public oystering, it's always a gamble. You don't know what you're going to make. The work you put into it, you may not receive back out of it. So with this, you know what you put into it, you will get back out of it. You know when you will get out of it. You have some people backing you up, such as Kevin, that will ensure that you have the resources to be able to sustain yourself, not only yourself, but your family and the families of everybody that is working underneath you. I feel as if this permit to go ahead and do these floating cages would help save us on labor, on time, and grow something prettier and better than everybody else. It's almost crucial to my livelihood and the livelihood of everybody else involved in this. So with that, thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. Anyone else in support? Yes, sir. State your name.
My name is Austin Van Zandt, and I've been a commercial fisherman pretty much my whole life.
Okay.
And just like Troy and Brandon are saying, every year is harder and harder. The gear prices go up, the value of sheepa goes down. It's very in and out. So when I got the opportunity to work with them, I saw, just like Brandon mentioned, sustainable check. And to me, the project does nothing for local people but create jobs like myself and, help out the industry around here, because that's what the whole county's about. So I see nothing but positive for me and my family. It's just bringing a steady income. I don't have to be scared from day to day what I'm going to make. Ever since this whole project started, it's been good. So for me, it's nothing but positive. That's it.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Anyone else in support?
Yes, sir.
Could you say?
Good morning. My name is Leonard Powell. Thank you for what you do.
Last name, sir?
Leonard Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Powell.
Thank you for what you do.
Thank you for being here.
I've been involved in what you do all my life. 74 years ago today, I was born here in Newport News.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. My father, 2 years later, bought a boat, and if he were living, he would be out there by the shipyard right now clamming with those boys from Gwen's Island. I grew up with him. I know him. I grew up working out there. Because of my father's vision and because of the bay and its magnificent bounty, I was able to go to college, get a degree, get commissioned in the Army, serve in Vietnam, and retire from the Army. It also, thank you very much. Because of the Army and my experience and my daddy and the bay, I was able to retire from the Army and start a business. And the business allowed me a quality of life that I am now living in Deltaville, and I'm on the creek in Deltaville. And I enjoy my creek, and it's more pristine than those boys got over in Gwynn's Island. I love it, and I want to preserve it. My great-great-grandfather bought that property in 1852, and he was a waterman, as was his son and grandson and my dad, and I left the business. I understand it from these boys' side of the river and what they do and the importance of the bay and how important it is to the economy of the state. I've lived it. I also understand it from the other side as a homeowner who wants to preserve the beauty and the pristineness of my property. But I don't own the water. It is ours. This morning I woke up singing, "This land is our land. It was made for you and me." It wasn't made just for me because I have been fortunate enough to be able to buy that house on the water and have a pristine view. It was made for everybody. The folk on Jackson Creek do the same thing. We don't want boats going by. Why? It belongs to everybody. We have to find a way to make this thing work. So not just the privileged people like me who are able to buy and have that house on the water, have an opportunity to the bounties and the beauties of the bay. But like these boys who need that bay and need its bounty to make a living and raise their family so maybe that one of their children can stand where I stand. Thank you. I know this is a tough spot for you, but I know that you will do the right thing because you've done it all my life. I appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Powell. Anyone else? Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. The board, I'm Hal Bork. I'm chairman of the Matthews County Economic Development Authority. You have in your packet our resolution, and you have in your packet my personal letter of recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to approve this project. I'm not going to take the time to read the resolution. I ask you to look over the first page of the resolution, and you'll hear comments that you've heard and all in support of this project. And I'll just touch on one. The Matthews County commercial seafood industry contributes more to employment than just the number of watermen and employees, processing and wholesaling businesses, as it supports boat design, construction, sales and repair, gear sales and repair, truck drivers, owners, sales clerks at wholesale and retail outlets, restaurant owners and workers, fishery scientists and managers, and stores that sell goods, services, and fuel. This is a critically important aspect of life in Matthews County. We have so few businesses in Matthews. Every business is very important to us. Every new business that we can bring is precious to us. Most of our tax base is tied up in real estate taxes. We don't have the industrial tax base that Matthews County richly used to have, and you'll see some of that alluded to in the resolution. And in my personal letter, I'd just like to quote, "New innovations in aquaculture have revitalized old and dying industries with new life and hope for real growth, growth which Matthews County sorely needs." Gentlemen, I hope, and ladies, I hope you can approve this project.
Questions of the gentleman? I do have one.
Yes,
that
sir.
You alluded to pertaining to real estate taxes.
Yes, sir.
There's been some indication in some of the correspondence pertaining to property value reductions. You being on the Board of Supervisors would be in this,
no, sir,
I mean, it's from, I'm sorry, from the economic development,
yes, sir,
perspective, would have an, I would think, an outlook on that. Do you have any comment that you would like to make about?
I have no, and having been on the equalization board this past year.
Yes, well, that's perfect.
I don't see any way, based on my experience with the equalization board, that the formulas that lead to real estate values and estimations would be impacted by this project.
Questions? Thank you, sir. Anyone else in support of the project? Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is John Vigliotta. I'm with Ward Oyster Company, and I'm a member of the Shellfish Growers Association. I'd like to speak to Kevin's character. I've known him for 30 years. One thing I can say about Kevin is that he's always done whatever he would say. And if he says that he's going to, like, make sure that there's no navigational issues or other things, I think you can take that to the bank. I can't tell you the number of times that I've heard people say, I totally support oysters, I support oyster aquaculture, I'm all for it, but just not right here. And the question is, if not here, then where? Maybe North Carolina, maybe Maryland, maybe those would be good places. Right now, Virginia is the leader on the East Coast in both clam and oyster aquaculture. We are the biggest producers. Other states look to Virginia to, as an example, as how can we be like them? How can we get those kind of businesses going and the benefits from that kind of business? One thing that you might want to do is take a look back. Let's not look forward right now at this point, but let's look backwards. What if Island Seafood wasn't there? Right? Island Seafood's been there for quite some time. I don't know the exact amount of time. It's been there for quite some time. And what if they didn't exist? They're probably the largest employer on Queens Island, right? You know, there would be no resources leaving from that area via that place, right? You wouldn't have seafood going up the road from there. No employment benefits, no gas purchases, no repair, no grocery, no ocean products purchases, no environmental benefits. So I'm just here saying that I think that Kevin is forward-looking in his approach, and that I support him in his endeavor.
Thank you, Mr. Vigliotta. Any questions? Thank you. Anyone else in support of the project? Yes, ma'am. Were you previously sworn, ma'am? Thank you. Could you state your name for the record?
My name is Beverly Ludford.
Ma'am.
My son and I are co-owners of Pleasure House Oysters, an oyster farm on the Lynn Haven River in Virginia Beach. I'd like to set a record by being briefer than all the other men who spoke before me.
That would be much appreciated.
Virginia needs to preserve its status as a leader on the East Coast in aquaculture. Currently, there are many states trying to develop their aquaculture industry through subsidies and assistance. They want what Virginia has. Our family knows this firsthand because we have been personally contacted by private and government representatives from North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, all seeking information and advice on how to encourage and support their aquaculture industry. Virginia has made progress in restoring our capabilities to provide a source of domestic seafood. Projects like this one should not be looked at as a new venture, but rather as restoring our historical fishery. The reduction in oyster harvest over the past 150 years is being corrected by the combined efforts of the oyster aquaculture farmers and the conservationist. The economic impact goes without saying. Last year, according to the report from the oyster experts and the shellfish aquaculture specialists from the Sea Grant Marine Extension Program and VIMS, the farm gate for Virginia shellfish was 15.9 million oysters, dollars worth, $15.9 million worth of oysters, and that Virginia aquaculture directly employs hundreds of Virginians, and they're the largest, the first on the East Coast for eastern oyster production. Our company supports, we have a good relationship with our neighbors on the Lynn Haven and Virginia Beach, and we really support Mr. Wade's application because we believe he can do this too, and we ask for the commission to vote in favor of it.
Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else in support of this project? Okay. We've been going at this now about an hour and a half, a little bit. We're going to take about a 10-minute break, and then we'll reconvene at 11:20. Thank you. For the record, we'll reconvene the September 25th, 2018 meeting of the Marine Resources Commission, and we're still on 18-0496. The supporters have spoken. At this time, the chair will hear from the opposition to this project. Anyone here in opposition to the project? Those that wish to speak in opposition to the project, would you please stand? And if you are going to, then please don't think as an afterthought. Because I'm swearing everybody in at one time. But if you do forget and then you decide you have something to say, tell me you haven't been sworn. But anyway, raise your right hands. You solemnly swear the testimony, Ms. Blaine, you don't have to. Solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, help you God. Thank you. Mr. Lang is an officer of the court, been previously sworn. Come forward, please.
Thank you.
And then identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Commissioner Bowman and members of the commission. My name is Jim Lang. I'm an attorney with Pender and Coward Law Firm, and I appreciate you hearing from me today.
Sir.
I represent David Judson, who lives at Gwin Island, and this is the view from Jim and Kim Williams' home. Do we have the bring up your
And you know, we will have to keep those, Mr. Lang, for 30 days, okay?
Well. This is right here.
Yes, sir.
Jim and Kim Williams' home is right there. David Judson's home is right here. He's got the lawn here that you see. And then Joel Atherton's home is right here. This is the view at the current time from Jim and Kim Williams' home. The project area would be about 600 feet offshore. Tony, how do I get to the next one? There we go. Okay. This project will have 714 cages is what has been proposed. This is a picture of one of the cages. The important thing to remember, though, is what sits above the water is the floats. There would be over 1,400 floats in the project. And these floats are not attractive just offshore your property. This is what they look like, and we give you a real-life view. We've got one coming in. While they're bringing this in, as you know, there's been over 100 protest letters. These things are controversial. The reason they're controversial is they're so unattractive. Ms. Everett, you were asking what do they look like, how big are the floats. This will give you a real-world view of what you're talking about here.
I have one question before we go any further. I need to identify this for an amount. Mr. Wade,
yes.
Under oath, is that the same type of float that you're going to use?
It's similar.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Yeah,
proceed.
Proceed.
The other point I'd make is where we got the turn around so they can see the float. The other point I'd make about this is Captain Howard Hudgen brought this float in today, and he'll be talking to you a little bit later on.
Okay.
Where he got this float is it broke loose from one of these floating aquaculture farms, and that's how it ended up in our possession. These things do break loose.
Okay.
Our clients have, they support oyster aquaculture. They support the livelihoods of the people that you saw come up here and speak earlier. They're completely in favor of cage on bottom aquaculture. They're completely in favor of shell on bottom aquaculture. What they object to is these floating cages like you see here, 1,400 of them, in front of waterfront residential property. And it's not just controversial in terms of what you saw in the docket, you know, the over 100 protest letters. This was above the fold Thursday in the local paper. It was run by the pilot online last night, and it was on the TV news again last night. And, you know, 3 years ago, it was cages in the Lynn Haven that created enough concern that led to the creation of a work group. And those were cages on bottom. And now here we are 3 years later, and this floating oyster aquaculture has enough people upset about it that Governor Northam issued a press release last month and stood up a work group that under Secretary of Natural Resources leadership, and I know you're well aware of it because Ms. Block and Commissioner Bowman and Mr. Watkinson on your staff are all part of this group. This is a big, important issue, and we're looking to the VMRC to strike the right balance here. People who live on the water, according to a 2018 study cited here, they pay extra to live on the water, but we already know that's true. And people who live on the water who have paid extra to live on the water, who then have 1,400 of these floats, these black floats, right off their doorstep, it's not going to help their property value. It's not going to help them resale. The Virginia Code, the factors, the statutory factors the commission is supposed to consider does include the effect on adjacent and nearby properties. And there was a zoning process in that was undertaken at Matthews County along with submitting the permit to the commission for the offshore work. And when our people went to the Matthews County Board of Supervisors in connection with the zoning and tried to raise the concerns about what's happening out in the water, what's happening with these floats, they were told by the Board of Supervisors or the county commissioners that they would not consider the things happening out in the water. Now, the point here is, if this body won't consider what's happening out in the water and the zoning authority won't consider what's happening out in the water, nobody's going to consider it, and it falls through the cracks. That's why this commission has to look at this issue and weigh it carefully.
Well, I can assure you we're going to look at what's in the water.
And the effect on the adjacent and nearby property.
Pursuant to 1205, yes, sir.
Now, Commissioner Bowman and Commissioner Ballard and Commissioner Tankard, each of you had questions about the effect on navigation. And that goes right to the heart of this issue. If you, these 17 rows and 42 cages per row, the staff's report says that some navigation would be restricted right over the project area. Actually, all navigation would be restricted over the project area. Although there's these 20-foot wide aisles in between the rows, nobody in the boating public is going to be able to use that. This is going to take 5.5 acres of water and put it out of bounds. And 5.5 acres is the same thing as 5 football fields. A football field from end zone to end zone is 1.1 acres. This is 5 football fields. The public's just going to have to stay out. They can't get in at all. Now, Milford Haven is what we call a choke point. And I want to talk about a choke point for a minute in relation to navigation. It's a narrow passage through which you have a lot of traffic in a broad area, but it has to get through this narrow passage, and so it all backs up. Great example is what happened to me trying to get in here this morning. I got backed up at a bridge and a tunnel because a whole bunch of traffic had to neck down and go through a bridge and tunnel. And that's why it took me an hour and a half to get here this morning instead of 40 minutes. When I was in the Navy 25 years, and we were chasing Soviet submarines during the Cold War, we would use choke points to catch them because out in the broad, wide ocean, they're hard to find. But if you can find a place where they have to go through a narrow passage, that choke point, that's where you could get them. Now, this area has become a choke point. Milford Haven has become a choke point. All this traffic within this circle right here, the only way for them to get out to the Chesapeake Bay is to go through the Haven, under the Milford Haven Bridge, through Hills Bay, the Piankatank River, and out that way. Used to be you could get out right down here through cutting the wall, holding the wall cut. But the Coast Guard removed the aids to navigation, and now that's not usable anymore. So all the traffic coming out of Matthews, out of this area, used to be able to get out that way. It now has to go through the Haven. And so you essentially have double the traffic going through here, through this choke point. And the bridge is unreliable. It gets stuck open or stuck closed. And when it gets stuck like that, the traffic all backs up right here in the project area, this project area right here. And this goes to the question about navigation, and it was a very good question about how big is the project area in relation to the navigable water space. Here's the applicant's facility, and here's where Jim and Kim Williams live. There's David Judson's house, and there's Joel Atherton's house. The project area, this is the project right here. And then these gray, that's the green polygon. The gray polygons are the same size as the project, but just replicated down here. And what you end up with is this choke point being the width you see here, one-third of the choke point is occupied by this project. That's not good for navigation. The legal standard that you're supposed to follow is no more than a minimal adverse effect. Taking up a third of the waterway right here with this project is much more than a minimal adverse effect. Before leaving this slide, I just want you to use as a reference point this building right here and then Joel Atherton's house right there.
Mr. Lang, your time is up, but in absence of fairness, I ask you a couple questions. I'll give you 2 more minutes.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Milford Haven is rich in historic resources. This is that area I told you to keep an eye on right here with the building. And this is Joel Atherton's home here. It's not often I get to talk off of a map created by Thomas Jefferson. He drew this map because of the significance of the Battle of Crooked Hill. The American forces were right here. Joel Atherton's house right there, line of sight. And that's how it ended up that this cannonball got found right in front of.
I don't want to keep that, please, dear. But I'll see it. But that's okay. I can see it. I don't want to enter that in evidence. Have to keep up with that. But thank you. Probably worth $10 million.
The public trust.
Yes, sir.
When you consider the factors of the public trust, we're supposed to protect and safeguard the public rights to the use and enjoyment of the subaqueous lands of the Commonwealth held in trust for the benefit of the people of Virginia. Now, when we talk about this point, we've got Maryland participation in the project. The public trust is supposed to be administered for the people of Virginia. Mr. Blackwell came up and spoke a minute ago, Maryland resident, and this email that was sent in to the commission identifies him right down here as Mr. Wade's business partner for the oyster business, acting as the liaison for the permit application and so forth. Mr. Blackwell is a Maryland oysterman, and last month the county up in Maryland where he operates went so far as to consider shutting down some of the piers, closing off his access some of the piers because of the way his off-the-bottom aquaculture is run up there. In 2014, Mr. Blackwell was interviewed for the New York Times in the article that you see here and said that he would not use cages within the sight of property owners because they're so ugly. They look like this.
Yes, sir. Please wrap it up.
The point on dolphins, you do have authority to regulate it because you regulate the fisheries resources of the Commonwealth, and the adjacent and nearby property owners don't want to see the dolphins chased off by this project. VIMS, Dr. Lukenbach's report, says that the dolphins will go to another location, a thing called habitat exclusion, and that does qualify under the Marine Mammal Protection Act as harassment. And the last point is the remaining speakers. We've got a 3-minute video to show you, and then we've got 4 people who will speak to the commission about navigation, including Captain Judson and Captain Hudgens, who found this. Tom Robinson is here to talk about historical resources, and then 2 witnesses, the effect on their property value, and then the concluding remarks, and I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Counselor. Any questions from commission? Thank you. No, sir, I don't. I'd like you can take a picture of it. And also, in all due respect, we need to get it out of here. The reason we do is from a fire marshal perspective, it could be being a problem. So if you can get a picture of it out in the hallway and take it, thank you. Everybody's had a chance to look at it from the commission perspective. Okay, great. Thank you, guys.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Jeff Wilson. I am an attorney with Pinder and Coward as well, but I'm also a resident of Portsmouth, Virginia.
All right, sir.
I'm here in both behalf, and I'm going to do you one better than the lady did earlier. Not only am I not going to speak much, but I'm going to show you a video in lieu. It'll be a lot more entertaining than anything I have. So. That's going to be the dolphins that are displaced if you vote. That's one of the pods right there in the inclusion area where they're playing.
Okay, for the record, did you author that? Did you do that? Or?
Yeah, you did, and if you speak to that, if they come up.
I just wanted to authenticate that as evidence. Who did that?
Did you say that people who work on the studio?
I did.
Your name, please?
My name is Ken Torbett of Glendale.
That's all I need. Thank you, Mr.
95% of that is filmed in Milford Haven. There were two shots. One to show the bottom of the dolphin up close. The pictures of the dolphin swimming in the haven were filmed 3 weeks ago.
Okay, thank you, sir. All right, who's next? Again, sir, you've been previously sworn. State your name for the record.
My name is Ken Torbett from Gwen's Island.
Okay.
And I want to apologize for having to cut my remarks short. This is important. I'm here to tell you a story about the dolphins. The dolphins that you saw at the end were filmed 3 weeks ago by David Judson, who'll speak later, out in front of her house. If you notice, the floats on the front end of it were the area designated to mark off the project by Mr. Wade and his associate. Tell you a story about the dolphins. The dolphins you saw were a pod of 10 to 12 estuarine dolphins they call Milford Haven and the Chesapeake Bay home. They live here. They don't migrate out to sea. They live in the Haven and the Chesapeake Bay, and they use Milford Haven like you use 95 or 64 to go to the store, to take your kids to school. They use it as a transit route. They live here. They feed here. They shelter here. They transit here. They nurse their young here. We even saw a young calf with a mother there. When I found out about this project, I was concerned about how it will impact the dolphins. So I contacted Dr. Mark Lucan back at VIMS. I contacted three experts at NOAA. And I contacted two marine biologists at the Smithsonian Institute. One by the name of Clyde Roper actually has retired in Urbana, and I asked him what would happen. He said, from his experience, when these dolphins encounter those floats, they will not try to swim around them. They could try to swim under them. And because dolphins come up at the last minute for breath, he said, if they encounter those floats, they could drown. Now, these dolphins can't speak for themselves, but the Marine Mammal Protection Act protects them. And this is the level B, and I will paraphrase in interest of time. Acts that have the potential to disturb a marine mammal in the wild by disrupting behavioral patterns, including but not limited to migratory breeding, nursing, feeding, or sheltering. I'll quote Dr. Lucan back again in just a minute. The NOAA study done that Dr. Lukenbeck did refer to was a study called Protective Species and Marine Aquaculture Interaction. It was done about a year and a half ago and was done by Dr. Morris and NOAA. It was 82 pages. Let me quote. Currently, negative interactions with protected species are more frequent with traditional fishing activities compared to aquaculture gear. But this could change with the continued expansion of aquaculture ventures. In order to prevent an increase in negative interactions, risk assessment and special planning measures should inform aquaculture sightings. Aquaculture sightings. NOAA recommends to site aquaculture farms which minimize the likelihood of overlap with migration routes on breeding and the habitat of protected species. These dolphins, sir, are right in the crosshairs of the Marine Mammal Protection Act. They put a show on for us every few days, and it's a big excitement in the bay with the children and people running down to see the dolphins. These floats, as Dr. Lukenbeck says,
sir,
some
wrap
habitat
it up, please.
Displacement occurs. I encourage you to help us protect these dolphins and their habitat.
Thank you, sir.
For the record, this is Dr. Vex.
Thank you, sir.
Passing to you. The area is highlighted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Who's next, please?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name's Tristan Judson. I'm born and raised on Gwynn's Island. My father's David Judson, and together we own 15 acres of wooded property neighboring Mr. Wade's Island Seafood Business. I grew up fishing pound nets, gill nets, crab pots, working on the water, and I've got a lot of respect for watermen. At the age of 20, I went and ran the Modiup Miss Anne after obtaining my U.S. Coast Guard license. I brought her in to Milford Haven a couple times, turned it around in the Haven, and took it out. I eventually attained my 3,000-ton U.S. Coast Guard license and have been in the super yacht industry for about 2016 and 2012, I brought the current boat that I've got, 164-foot motor yacht, and anchored right in the exact spot where Kevin Wade's lease is. My concern is this. The navigation, the hazard to navigation in this area is tremendous. I can't stress enough. I've been from Galapagos and logged 250,000 miles between Galapagos and the Mediterranean Sea. I've seen a lot of things. I've never seen anything that compares to what's proposed here today. This vessel is a recreational yacht for an individual family. That's who I work for, one family. It's a recreational yacht. We go to the same places every other recreational boat goes, this being one of them. And the closest thing I've seen to this project is maybe a tuna pin off the west coast of Mexico, 25 miles offshore, not 500 or 600 feet off residential property. In my professional opinion, this floating pod proposal is a huge hazard to navigation and severe safety concerns that has not been taken under consideration, that needs to be taken under consideration. As a captain of a superyacht and an expert in navigation, I will no longer jeopardize the safety of my yacht or crew to come up in an area such as this if this proposal is approved. I would like to request the proposal be denied because of the severity it places on hazards to navigation in this heavily residential area. Thank you.
Any questions? I have one. That was copyright 2012.
Correct.
Would you bring that through hole in the wall now?
I didn't come through the hole in the wall.
Okay, to the other side?
Both these, I came through the bridge.
Through the bridge? Okay. The right now, considering the navigation situation as far as the depth, is the depth satisfactory now where if you wanted to bring those vessels in?
Absolutely.
You still could? Okay.
I won't anchor it once this is approved. If this is approved, I won't jeopardize coming in and spinning these boats around in there. But as of right now, today...
Could you spin that boat around in there if that project was there? I'm sorry?
I wouldn't try. There's no reason. It's not worth tearing up running gear on a yacht this size.
But my question is, with your proficiency, could you spin that boat around if this project were approved in the area that was there?
Okay. I'll answer it again. I wouldn't try. I wouldn't try coming up there.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who's next? Good day, sir.
Good morning. My name's David Judson. Excuse me for having to read much, but I'm not a speaker.
That's okay, Mr. Judson. Please proceed.
I live at 293 Risby Town Road on Gwynns Island, and I would like to thank you guys for allowing me the chance to address my concerns about this project. It has basically turned my world upside down. The proposed floating cages will cover our waterfront, and the shoreside processing will be in our backyard. We'll be going from a pristine, quiet neighborhood to a multi-state industrial complex. This not only affects my family, but there are 31 other property owners within an 800-foot radius of Island Seafood. I've been around the property we live on all my life, and let me skip over some of this so I can get through it. I have serious concerns about the navigation and safety issues. Tristan covered some of the 5.5 acres in which Mr. Wade proposes to place his floating cages is a heavily traveled waterway. There were over 700 boats that went past the proposed area this past Labor Day weekend. And the most I saw, many of them go through the floats, the float areas, and I counted about 8 this weekend at one time. And in previous years, I've counted as many as 23 at one time, sitting on the porch, looking both ways up and down the haven. This JPA will also remove one-third of the navigable waters in Milford Haven for the length of the floats. And this will create a choke point, as Mr. Lang talked about, as there are eight creeks, two marinas, a public boat ramp, and a yacht club that boats can navigate from to travel up or down the Haven. And with the hole in the wall cut off, that'll increase the percentage of them that go through the bridge, that come down past the floats and go through the bridge. And there are the area marked off the floating cages is affects the navigating in and out of Edwards Creek, which is next to us. There's probably 25 boats in there, and coming out the creek to go west toward the bridge, you have to basically go through the. I mean, normally you would be going through the float area. There are more issues that have been or will be addressed by others. I feel that the precedent that the approval of this project would set is very important. The Haven is a unique body of water. We have more than our share of issues that cause conflict. And none of us are against aquaculture, but we all feel that more thought and planning is needed regarding where these floats can be placed. If the VMRC can allow someone to drop an industrial-sized oyster farm in the middle of a highly navigated and populated waterway that is also the site of a historical battle, then it is clear that Virginia property owners have no protection and no water in the Commonwealth is off limits to commercial interests. I respectfully ask that you deny this permit. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Any questions of the gentleman? Mr. Zedrin, thank you.
Are these concerns brought before the Board of Supervisors? I believe you heard them testify.
They wouldn't let us. Our county Board of Supervisors, yeah. We weren't allowed to speak. We couldn't speak on anything related to the water. They shut us off completely.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. Thank you, sir. Anyone else in opposition to the project?
Commissioners, my name is Howard Hudgens. I'm a U.S. Coast Guard licensed captain. I work for a company that does on-water towing and salvage of disabled vessels. So I'm operating these waters continually all the time, and I run into a lot of situations. I run a lot at night. I know a lot of people that run at night, run in reduced visibility. That's going to really, be an issue here where there's such a confined area. I just feel like, somebody coming in, just if these guys are just coming in from a late night on the water and they're, trying to navigate to their dock, they're going to have to go around this. There are going to be people that are going to, be navigating in and out of those channels through the bridge that are going to do it at night or in heavy rain, whether they're caught in a situation like that or whether they intentionally go out in the dark. They're going to be affected by this. It's just a close area. And I see a lot of people get tangled up in nets. I rescue them out of nets. I rescue them out of, even just crab pot buoys. I mean, there's a lot of obstacles out there. But if you can create a large obstacle as what you have before you, there could be a lot of potential problem. And even, with smaller craft, it could even be life-threatening. So,
thank you.
I appreciate you hearing.
Any questions, Captain? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anyone else in opposition? Yes, ma'am.
I have the same thing on the PowerPoint. If you rather, this might be easier.
You can go with this. I'll hand this out. Be glad to. Proceed, ma'am.
My name's Eileen Koch, and the two charts or maps that I gave you are pieces that just the recreational boating public is going to find. I live at 385 Oak Point Road, right down from Matthews Yacht Club. So for me, access out to the bay has to be through Milford Haven. Mm-hmm. I'm really concerned about how these proposed cages are going to affect all of us that live on Stutz Creek. And within that area, there's about 650 of us. Navigation by water is absolutely paramount for us and for the marina that's right there at Matthews Yacht Club where people come and go. Over the past year, as those markers and Milford Haven East have been removed, the impact has been almost immeasurable. We have to go out through that area. Milford Haven's a busy channel. We have sailboats without any motorized equipment, a number of kayaks. I'm a beginning sailor. I'm the kind of person that an experienced boater does not want to see because, you know what, I'm learning. It means I'm going to make mistakes. When I go out, I need to tack, I need to turn, and I don't have the kind of control that somebody that's a captain of a boat is going to have, someone that is a commercial person. So I'm out there doing my best, taking the boater safety classes and all the things I'm supposed to do, but I am also still learning. Vessels ranging from paddle craft and small vessels and so on, we all use the Haven. The second map I showed you there is from the Department of Conservation and Recreation, and that is showing the blue ways. Blue ways are those waters that kayakers and paddleboarders and so on are expected to use. We are told specifically to stay out of the channel. It is in print in document after document after document, including those that come from the state of Virginia. The blue ways are really important. Paddle boards and kayaking is the fastest growing water sport in the nation. In fact, the U.S. Coast Guard has developed a paddle sport program. The idea being that we need to recognize how many of us are out there in our kayaks, on our paddle boards, on canoes, and what impact we will have in the area. In addition, within this area, we have a new Sea Scouts group. They are anchoring their boats in Edwards Creek. They are operating in Milford Haven. They have one boat, or at least they did 2 weeks ago, anchored at Matthews Yacht Club. They need to be able to come out into this area. To take away 5 acres of navigable water will have a real negative impact. It can also be life-threatening. So I'm asking you, in the interest of the children, the Sea Scouts, all of those that are in these small vessels, to take into account what kind of effect this will have. We're not in the main channel. I understand the cages aren't in the main channel. But we are the people that operate outside the channel. We need to get out of the way of the wakes that are created by the large boats. We have got to be in that area where those cages are proposed to be. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. You
solemnly swear a testimony you're about to give be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth is up to God.
I do.
State your name for the record,
Woody
please.
Hogg.
I'm sorry?
Woody Hogg.
Thank you, Mr. Hogg.
My wife and I own a condo right in view of the site that the gentleman showed. And I'm definitely pro oyster. My family goes back as far as we can tell because of my wife's fascination with history and genealogy to the 1800s. My grandfather was a waterman from Ware Neck, right around that point. My stepfather was president of York River Oyster Corporation, which had thousands of acres of oysters, some grounds, some of which Mr. Wade owns today, he told me. So he was it was after his death, but corporation went bankrupt with the oyster kill. A couple of things that sitting there, and certainly this great the last lady who was up here, over the years that we've been down, it's been 20-some years, we've watched the increase of paddle boarders, which didn't exist back then, to our knowledge. Certainly a lot of kayakers, a lot of canoe people. There's lots of jet skis that go right through there also to stay out of the channel from the boats. So there is a lot of boat traffic through there that Mr. Judson had also mentioned. To my knowledge, all three of the owners of this venture, none of them live in Matthews County. The decision you're going to make is going to impact Matthews County and Gwynns Island forever. And we feel, the group of us, that this is just the first request that you'll see. So the decision you make is not just going to be for 5.5 acres of what's there, which is going to be really hard for these. It's going to impact real estate values. I'm a realtor. I own a pretty large real estate company in Richmond. I have 100 agents, sell 1,000 properties, been in for 49 years. There's no doubt in my mind that the value of the property owners that sit there is going to be impacted drastically. Turn this around. If you had bought a waterfront property or your family had had, and I was going to put up 5.5 acres of 1,400 of these floats, what would be your feelings? Those are going to be there forever. There's going to be more of those than those once this is set to precedence, in my opinion. So I think that your decision is going to be a very serious one. And you have not only the citizens of Matthews County. Lots of them are here, lots of property owners who, and maybe some of them's property values will not be impacted, but some of them will be. The other thing I have to say this, and I don't know if this is kosher to say this or not, but I sat on a publicly traded company for, I was a director and on the executive committee of a company that was publicly traded. In my history of being involved with a company like that, if there was any hint of impropriety or biasness on a decision such as the magnitude of this, I would recuse myself. And I've done that before. And to have people who have four permits and then does business with this applicant, to me, it's not right. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name's Kim Williams, and I'm reading for someone that needed and wanted to be here, the owner of the Narrows Marina.
Would you like to state his or her name?
Yes. I'm going to read it. My name is Preston Jenkins. Okay. I'm the owner of the Narrows Marina, which my family has owned and operated since my father built it in 1964. Narrows Marina sits at the entrance to Milford Haven on the southwest tip of Gwynns Island, near the base of the Milford Haven Bridge. I'm writing because it's come to my attention that the VMRC has received a permit application requesting to place 5.5 acre floating oyster operation in the Haven, JPA 180496. I object to this for safety reasons. Milford Haven is a small tourist area with a very narrow navigation channel. It is a highly congested waterway with heavy boat traffic at all times of the year, especially during the summers and on weekends. Traffic has become even worse since the Coast Guard removed the navigational aids from the hole in the wall, making it necessary for all transiting boats to pass through Milford Haven. For example, the Matthews Yacht Club is located on Stutz Creek, just southeast of my marina. Every yacht that comes in or out of the yacht club will have to navigate around these 700 floating cages. There are usually 3 to 4 large sailboats anchored in the middle of the haven, right in the location that the oyster operation would be. Because of the small size of the area, this is the only place in the haven that these larger boats can anchor or turn around. It's also where transiting boats must sit and wait for the Milford Haven Bridge to open. Traffic becomes even more congested when the bridge is inoperative, which happens fairly often. I'm very concerned that this project will be a hazard to my customers and their boats and a detriment to my business. And for these reasons, I object to this plan and request that you deny JPA 180486. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. I'm Tom Robinson from beautiful downtown Moon, Virginia, across from Gwynns Island. I'm a historian. I serve as chair of the newly formed Matthews Museum and Cultural Alliance, which was formed to bring tourism to Matthews, bus tours mainly, with the hotel, the Islander coming back on online here in the future. That'll be a 40-room hotel for the visitors to come and be able to spend the night. I also serve as vice president of the Matthews Maritime Foundation, and in that position, we're stepping up to the plate to help tourism to bring funding into Matthews, which virtually has no industry. We're getting a 54-foot cruise boat, a Chesapeake Bay dead rise built in the area, historic dead rise boat, 42-passenger, to have regular tours coming out from that point around Milford Haven to Hills Bay through the bridge to talk about the history of Matthews County and the history of Gwin's Island, and specifically the Battle of Cricket Hill. A lot of people never heard about this battle. However, prior to the signing of the Declaration of Independence, when Royal Governor Lord Dunmore looted the powder magazine in Williamsburg, which caused a little friction among the rebels, they chased him out of the area. He escaped, brought his fleet of almost 100 ships to Gwin's Island, docked them as a floating city in Hills Bay and Milford Haven, directly over the spot where these cages would go. When the declaration was signed, very few people knew about it, and 5 days after that Declaration of Independence was signed, Lord Dunmore was having tea in his cabin, and one of his sailors came up to him and said, Governor Dunmore, some of the rebels are over there on the hill, and they're putting cannons up, and they're pointing them in our direction. What should we do? Well, Lord Dunmore said, well, as soon as I finish my tea, we will send a boat over and quickly dispatch with those little crickets on the hill. At about that time, the crickets opened up with 1-pound and 8-pound cannonballs. One of the first ones went through his cabin, smashed his prized china collection, put a piece of wood through his leg, and immediately 100 ships are trying to escape on a windless day. The only thing they had going for them was the outgoing tide, and they had to cut all of their anchor lines. So they were expecting at least 100 anchors under the water that had to be cut as the ships are floating away, being bombarded by those crickets on the hill. The embankments, the emplacements for the cannons are still exactly the way they were in 1776, which is now Morningstar Marina. And if you saw part of the video, the cannon fire from Morningstar Marina, the crickets on the hill area, they have found the cannonballs in the water and on the shoreline where one of Lord Dunmore's forts was located. We are in the process now of trying to get this named a National Historic Battlefield. It was one of the first land-sea battles of the Revolution, and even though it's not as well known as some of the other battles, it was probably one of the most important battles of the Revolution, since it metaphorically and physically cut the anchor lines to Great Britain. The royal governor was chased out of Virginia once and for all because of the Battle of Cricket Hill. And this is a very important area. We have come up with a musical that has been very well received. It's called Crickets on a Hill. And we're hoping to see that in the future as something, a nightly drama like The Lost Colony or Unto These Hills. And if you can see, we recreate that battle each year. And to have 1,400 oyster floats sitting out there where the fleet was sitting, it would certainly take away from our ability to be able to have a drama there and bring in more tourism to Matthews. So on the historical aspect, we would certainly hope you would disapprove this.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir. Sir?
I have not been sworn in yet.
Gentlemen, been sworn in? Everybody else? How many more intend to speak than wish to be sworn in? You solemnly swear a testimony you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes, sir.
State your name, please.
James Brooks. My wife and I are here today in capacity of representing 26 property owners of the condominiums that overlook this project. I can't say more than what Woody said and many other have, so I'd like to do something a little different so as not to be redundant. First, let me thank you all very much, ladies and gentlemen, for showing us in opposition of this much more respect than we received at the Board of Supervisors hearing. We were talked down to and clearly disrespected, so thank you all very much. I think all of us here are for aquaculture. Technology has exceeded, whether it be privacy and the internet, or whether it be energy or solar panels, aquaculture has, technology has exceeded the consumer protection laws that address the issues. Private property rights are one of the things that make America what it is. And my ability to sit on the second floor of a condo and overlook the most pristine body of water, which will be completely ruined by floating cages, is as equal as the rights of sailors, water recreationists, paddle boarders, kayakers. All of that will be unfairly and improperly ruined by not just Mr. Wade's project, but floating cages in general. The surface rights of the use of the water has been case after case, and I believe all the way to the Supreme Court of Virginia, proven to be only possible to keep the public out if you can own the land underneath it, which only exists if you can trace your title back to what's called a crown grant, a handwritten document by King Charles prior to 1637. I don't think that's this here. These are public waters, and for the VMRC to allow, whether it's Mr. Wade's or any, floating cages to take away the right of other citizens to use the public water is simply wrong. But there's no consumer protection law that says you can't do that. There's also, I don't believe, one that says you can do that. I don't believe it's addressed. So it's up to your integrity and morals to help the public and protect us about this. The oyster leases are for the beds. They've always been for the beds. And I would say, yes, your decision is going to impact the industry of aquaculture and oyster farming, but it should be done, and cages with legs on them can be put on the bottom, and you can farm oysters without stealing the public's use of the surface of the water here and anywhere else. It is not any different, in my opinion, than if you people were not the commission of the VMRC, but the Department of Forestry. Make believe you're the commission controlling the Department of Forestry. And there's an issue of a state forest, and a businessman decides, because there's no laws one way or another, he's going to take state forest land, clear cut the trees, and build solar panels, because there's no law that says he can't do it. But it is nothing more than the theft of public property for a private interest. And I would respectfully request that you immediately deny the current request by Mr. Wade, and also consider tabling all others until such time as the Attorney General's office and whatever other governing bodies you mentioned earlier that would control whether or not this is actually a legal thing to do. And thank you very much for listening to
thank
us.
You, sir. Yes, sir, good afternoon. Could you state your name for the record, please?
James Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
First, I'd like to thank the VMRC board today for allowing my comments with full consideration on this very important issue. My house and property are located at 383 Risby Town Road. This property is adjacent to Island Seafood. To start, let me state for the public record, I am adamantly opposed to this aquaculture location in Milford Haven. One, it severely restricts any convenient navigation to and from my approved dock. This 5-acre-plus farm takes away all direct southeast access to the bay and all direct east access to Edwards Creek. It also takes away safe return to my dock on strong north and northwest winds, as well as night, fog, or other extreme weather that limits visibility. It also eliminates any future use of sailing craft that must be sailed in to reach the pier. As a landowner who pays dearly for the right to reach deep navigable water, I find it unacceptable that my right to convenience, certain sailing craft, and safety would be trumped by a private for-profit business. It is my belief as a landowner with all afforded riparian rights that I must be assured a safe and generous cone of navigation to and from all existing channels in Milford Haven. As a side note, Mr. Wade has not applied for a floating case permit that places any obstruction in front of his own pier. My second objection is the imminent reduction of property values of mine and neighboring real estate. The wonderful views afforded by these properties represent a significant portion of these investments. Their value is confirmed all across the real estate ads each week. Open the paper and you will read endless views, spectacular views, million-dollar views. I'm sorry to say I've yet to read an ad that promotes aquaculture float views. No one should shame us for our attempt to preserve our investment and passion for the Haven. Our views and subsequent high taxes are in sharp contrast to the few dollars an acre the applicant will pay to ruin them. The mere fact that this location is being considered in the first place is troubling and is baffling. Milford Haven is a small body of water, is densely populated with waterfront residential homes, and has an extremely high volume of recreational boat traffic, these latter two being both confirmed by the VMRC staff report. This float operation should be placed in a better location, one that doesn't diminish the wealth, use, and enjoyment of so many Virginia citizens for the increase in wealth of another. No business with any moral compass should attempt this, and no governing body should sanction it. Therefore, taking in these facts, we can only assume the applicant chose this intrusive site for his pure convenience. Convenience should never come into play in this decision. Many of our local watermen travel many miles each day in their dead rises to and from their work sites. Is this form of agriculture not worth a boat ride to a more remote location? If not, maybe it's not worth doing at all. I hope the board recognizes and takes into serious account that these waters belong to all Virginians, and is this populace that shoulders the burden for their care. Turning this public trust over to private industry should require much more thought and planning. The VMRC staff report supplies no good reasons for this location.
Wrap it up, please, sir.
And it falls well short in its attempt to mitigate all the negative aspects. And finally, you know, today the board has an opportunity to find a better balance between commercial, recreational, and residential interests. In the long run, running roughshod over these latter two will not be advantageous to this industry. If the board truly believes in this form of aquaculture, don't vote for this location. Vote for a change of location. This does not belong in Milford Haven. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, or afternoon, sir.
Yeah, it is.
My
name is Danny Louder. I, too, am a condo owner of the Gwinns Island Condo Association. One of 27 owners there. Mr. Skagg showed a picture this morning on the ground level view of those potential proposed cages. The condos all have at least a four-foot deck above ground level, and half of them have a second and third floor. Okay, so you're looking 20 and 30 feet across the Haven to get a bird's-eye perspective of that panoramic view. I've been there for 8 years. My relatives and my friends, that when they enter the second floor of my condo, they say, you have a $1 million view here. I said, absolutely. I've been blessed to have that view. But back on May 22nd of this year, I attended my first VMRC meeting here at this very, very room. And that was to hear the application for the Rappahannock Oyster Company. But what caught my attention initially, I was very pleasantly surprised to see a governing body of the state open a public meeting in prayer. And in that prayer, the commissioner was seeking divine wisdom and guidance relative to being a steward. And also in that particular prayer, he prayed for any decision you made would be in accordance with the laws and Constitution of Virginia. Okay, I sat through that meeting for 2 hours. You fellows denied that request. You made an eloquent summary, basically stating again that the public waterways belong to the citizens of Virginia. On that basis, the permit was denied. Okay, moving on to Milford Haven, I'd like to share with you a picture I ran across some years ago. I'll give some to you folks, and I got a few more to pass into the audience here. Hope there's enough. This came from the archives of the Gazette Journal newspaper.
Just pass it. Look
at it and give it to. You can see from the caption on the picture, I'll read it to you. Small craft of every description crowded Milford Haven on Matthew's Day in observance held September 29, 1946. And you can see it's more than crowded. But these small craft were being used by the citizens of Virginia. One other takeaway I'd like to, that you would see in this picture, you will notice that this waterway obviously is not encumbered with floating devices in the water, foreign. For those 72 years that represent generation after generation of Virginians, the citizens of Virginia has used the waterways of Milford Haven for recreational purposes. Now, if you would allow me to fast forward this picture to today's date, September 25th, 2018, you would have to add to this picture sailboaters, large and small, jet skiers, water tubers, water boarders, kayakers, and paddle boarders. In addition, since 1946, two marinas with over 400 slips have been now reside within a quarter mile of the proposed site. As well, a public boat ramp is there for all the power boat users. You know, in looking at this application relative to its impact on the waterways versus the Rappahannock, there's no comparison. The Rappahannock Oyster Company was in shallow water, and on a yearly basis in Milford Haven, thousands or more people use this public waterway. Thousands. Over 72 years, I can only estimate that tens of thousands of Virginia citizens have enjoyed the unencumbered waters of Milford Haven. In closing, we, the citizens of Virginia, request that VMRC deny the permit application at Mr. Wade's request on the same basis of the law you denied the Rappahannock permit. That is, in accordance with the public trust doctrine that states the waterways of Virginia belong to all its citizens. By denying this request, we believe you will remain this good steward, and a steward is one who preserves, protects, and maintains the magnificent resources to which you've been entrusted by your Creator. In closing, my prayer today would be that, based on the public discussion we've had today, that the divine wisdom and the divine judgment that you seek would be sought based on the information that's been revealed today. And we respectfully, again, request that you deny the permit application.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. State your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Atherton. I have been sworn, and I am here because an individual that wanted to speak totaled his car on the way here today, and he sent me his letter. And if you would allow me to read that, I would like
Under those circumstances, most definitely.
I am here to voice my strong opposition to the application submitted by J&W Seafood to place aquaculture cages in Milford Haven, Matthews County. I own a residence in close proximity to J&W's proposed aquaculture area. As the owner of a family property on the Ware River in Gloucester, where aquaculture has proliferated, I have witnessed firsthand the adverse impact that aquaculture has had on residential property owners and residential users of the river. In fact, I relocated from the Ware River to Matthews entirely because of the Ware River aquaculture operation. My objection is based in part on my Ware River experience. The J&W proposal will initially utilize 5.5 acres in Milford Haven. When the cages are placed in this area, It will render that portion of Milford Haven unusable by recreational boaters who have the right to this space. Relative to other areas on the bay, Milford Haven is a confined area which has heavy recreation. I won't repeat. You've heard that. I said initially 5.5 acres because, as my Ware River experience has shown, J&W and other operators will soon be requesting more acreage in Milford Haven, and I believe that's already happened in Milford Haven. Future applicants will reference the existence of initial 5.5 acres as a reason why VMRC should approve more aquaculture acreage. In effect, this hearing is about many more than 5 acres on Milford Haven. I decided not to further my investment in the Ware River property due to the aquaculture operation. As such, it is clear that the existence of aquaculture on the Ware River negatively impacted my property as well as others. The Milford Haven owners have a right to protect their property. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Who's next?
Did I say who that was? No, you didn't.
Did not. I'm sorry. Thank you. Well, I'm sorry. Thank you for the help. Name?
That was for Burke King.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you for allowing us to speak. My name is Jean Nelson, and I'm a resident of Queens Island. I don't know if we can bring up the picture of the area of Milford Haven again, just as a source of reference.
Sure, Ben.
Because the comment, I know today that we're talking about one particular operation, but I just want to keep in mind, once that's back up there. As you can see here, a lot of my comments are going to be, although we're addressing the one, a lot of my comments are based on this entire, the entire area there. All of these are basically in play, although we're talking about one of them today. Okay. We all know that the most important opposition to large aquaculture operations arises when they ask to be located in areas in front of residential waterfront. But the reason the argument surfaces over and over is because of quality of life and ability to access freely the water in front of these residences is important. We also know that the Virginia Code 1205 states in part that the public has a right to use and enjoy the subaqueous waters which are held in trust for the benefit of the people and confirmed by the Public Trust Doctrine of Virginia. It states further that in order to safeguard and protect these rights, the Commission shall be allowed to consider, among other things, the project's effect on nearby properties. This distinction is made because the state of Virginia believes the protection is for the protection of the waters for all of its citizens and not just for a single business. We also know that the governor has recognized that the siting of oyster farms in residential waterfront areas has been the largest source of conflict and divisiveness since its inception, and to that end, he has established a working group whose mission is to focus their efforts on finding solutions to conflicts between shellfish owners and other users, namely waterfront property owners, boaters, and local governments. This effort will helpfully ensure that one person's financial gain does not supersede the rights of numerous waterfront property owners, because their rights are important too. The Chesapeake Bay contains over 700,000 acres of shallow waters, less than 10 feet in depth. While there are plenty of areas suitable for a large-scale oyster operation, a small congested body of water such as Milford Haven, which is lined with residential homes, does not present an ideal location. By their own admission, the J&W on the J&W website, it states that they have thousands of acres of leased bottom, and they are one of the largest leaseholders of private oyster beds in Virginia. While it would be an inconvenience for him to look elsewhere for a more suitable site, it's also an inconvenience to those that are not able to play, fish, paddleboard, or swim from the waters outside of their door if it becomes blocked by an industrial oyster farm operation. Mr. Wade does have alternative sites for his business, but oddly, the homeowners on Gwynn's Island don't have the luxury of alternative sites to recreate on the island. Although we are surrounded by water, the state has privatized the beaches. The state is now threatening the one remaining end-of-the-road access that we have to a beach, and now VMRC and the state is looking to consider blocking the residential access to the waterfront with oyster farms along the shore. What is the point of guaranteeing our right to use and enjoy the waters if our access is blocked at every turn or set aside for the exclusive use of a large business enterprise? As with most of the people in the room, I'm not against the farms per se. I think it's a great idea so long as they are situated in such a way that allows them to coexist in our shared waters. And while there may be some flexibility where the large operations can thrive and operate successful, kids, kayakers, swimmers, paddleboard users, families, and dock-top fishermen all require a safety zone of protection where they can recreate away from the hazards of unseen underwater cages and acres of water-top floats. While we are considering today just one farm, approval of this one farm will quickly open the doors to other similar farms in the area, and the haven could quickly become filled with floats and cages. Oyster farm and recreational users do not mix and should not be co-located in the same general vicinity.
Ma'am, can you wrap it up, please?
Thank it you. Is a recipe for disaster, and they both require to be in protected areas for their safety and operation. It is my hope that the governor's working group will come to the same conclusion and mandate that a recreational safety zone to protect those who recreate in our shorelines from the dangers inherent with being co-located with an oyster operation, allowing both users some reasonable room to breathe. It is my hope that you will have the wisdom to do the same.
Thank you, ma'am.
The commission has sought to discount the issues of sight lines,
ma'am,
navigation, and historic importance. I hope that safety is not an issue that you choose to minimize too. Thank you for your time, and I'm sorry for overrunning.
That's okay, ma'am. Thank you. Good afternoon, ma'am.
Hi. My name is Marcy Benemer, and I will be short and to the point.
Were you sworn earlier, Ms. Benemer?
Pardon?
Were you sworn earlier?
Yes,
proceed,
was.
Please. Thank you.
Yes. I am the president of the Matthews Maritime Foundation in Matthews, and we are very concerned about something which was mentioned very briefly, and that is on the western end of Milford Haven is the Matthews Maritime Foundation's Gwynn's Island Boat Shop. It is the headquarters of the Middle Peninsula Sea Scout Program, which sponsors educational and recreational youth activities for boys and girls in their teens. In these protected waters of Milford Haven, it is here that they learn sailing skills, boating safety, and much more. Even the kids in this worthy program will have to watch out for 1,400 floats while learning to tack in Milford Haven. Such a large-scale oyster farming project will disrupt the lives of many residents and visitors on land and on the waters of Milford Haven. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Who's next, please? Good afternoon, sir.
My name is Morgan Moss. I live on Gwynn's Island. And I have the enviable position of bringing up the end of the line on this. And I will try to be brief. I don't know about you. Those of you who are old enough to remember Paul Harvey and Paul Harvey News. And then he had the rest of the story. So I'm hoping that you've been able to hear the rest of the story, because there is a rest of the story. And to create some cognitive dissonance where you look at and potentially consider maybe even changing your mind for the position that you may have come in here thinking that you would act on. The Marine Resources Commission is here to protect marine and, as your sign says outside, tidal waters and homelands. And I am grateful to you for what you're doing. Thank you for the opportunity of being able to speak to you for these few minutes. What I'd like to do is ask all the people who are in opposition to this permit to please stand and remain standing for just a minute. Everybody who's in opposition. I wanted these people to be able to speak who did not choose to speak. If the law is concerned about habitat exclusion, and that referenced dolphins very significantly, what about habitat exclusion for all of these people who are standing in front of you right now, who use the water and who the people, that, their families that they represent? They understand that the water is a shared resource. They support bottom cages or shells on the bottom. The reason they do not support this project is it's because it's not a shared use of the water. The floats and cages occupy not only the bottom, the water column, and also the surface. They are packed so tightly that you can't take a boat through there. You might be able to kayak through there. Gently, I do that from time to time in Milford Haven. But there are jet skis and other uses of water that have been, I won't repeat, but the sign will be up, keep out. This is not yours anymore. And for one person's benefit and profit at the exclusion of that, I think is an important issue for you to consider. Please be seated. For those of you who know D.H. Lawrence, D.H. Lawrence said in the class in Studies in American Classical Literature, it talked about a spirit of place. What we have tried to do with you today is give you a sense of spirit of place of Gwen's Island and Milford Haven and what there is here to preserve. You've heard about the dolphins and the dolphin exclusion and the consequences of that. Those things are at risk. And I ask you to please protect those. We've heard about the history of Milford Haven and what occurred there. I am asking you to please protect against that risk. You have also heard of property values and navigation. I want to bring your attention to one other thing, and that is the aesthetics from the water, not just from landowners. Some kind of way or other in this process, we're not just waterfront property owners with views. We've somehow become demonized in this debate. I don't think that's right. I think we all are stakeholders. I think we have to be able to look at this in a holistic way. Aesthetics from the water. Aesthetics are marketable for Matthews County, and Matthews County is in dire economic straits right now. Absolutely no doubt about that. I respectfully request that you preserve and protect what is at risk here. And I respectfully ask you to reject this permit. Thank you.
Thank you. I presume by Mr. Lang that comment was he is the last to speak on at this juncture?
I believe so.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Wade, you have 3 minutes to rebut anything that was said if you'd like to speak again. Or your spokesperson, whichever you prefer.
So again, I'm J.D. Blackwell, and I'm a partner in this Waster Venture. And as previously mentioned, I am a Maryland resident, but I'm here as a partner in this because I bring 6 years of expertise in aquaculture. In fact, 6 years of floating cages in a very high energy environment, not sheltered waters like Milford Haven, but in the open Chesapeake. So it's been a very long meeting. There's been lots of opinions, and I respect everybody's concerns. My purpose here is to rebut, but I really want to know what to rebut to. I don't want to bore you and just try to. I could spend about 2 hours commenting on everybody's comments, and I don't think that's useful. So I'd like to ask, do you all have a specific, has a concern been raised that you would like to hear a specific comment about?
We would like for you to finish your comments first, and we'll ask you questions.
Okay.
Okay.
And that's fine.
And all due respect.
So one comment I think is important to make is that the water isn't, that it's absolutely true we occupy the physical space. There's many, many, many people that will be using this water. I think that anglers will find they absolutely love fishing around these cages. We are floating habitat. That means food, and that means that bait fish will feed off the stuff growing on our cages, and that means big fish will feed off of them. In my experience, nearby house rent, high-end house renters love that I'm near them because they rent kayaks and paddleboards for people to come paddle through the cages. It provides a point of interest for people to look at. And while that may be amusing to some people,
please address.
It's very true. So I'm going to look very quickly at my notes. And okay, so I don't think I have any other comments on
that. Any questions by members of the commission? Mr. Ballard?
I think I asked this once before. I'd like to ask it again and get more clarification because for me this is really going to come down to this one issue. We have a million reasons and a million protesters for why not here. Can you please elaborate on why this specific site and not anywhere else in the Chesapeake Bay?
Well, this floating cage permit application sits right next to the pier at Island Seafood. Island Seafood will be the processing center, will be the place that we bring oysters on shore, clean them, pack them, cool them, load a truck and ship from. And with this case, if you remember when I go back to that lease, no other part of that lease makes sense. It either blocks someone's pier, Mr. Judson or Mr. Williams. The back part of it, unfortunately, is SAV. SAV creates a whole lot of area that's simply off limit. So we are outside the channel, out of the SAV, and not blocking any piers. So that's why this exact location, and the reason we have the floating cages there, because it'll be the last third to grow out of these oysters, and it'll allow for the safest harvest that we know of.
Follow up, Mr. Ballard?
I understood the location in terms of the section of that one particular lease.
Sure.
But I believe it was testified that Mr. Wade has leases throughout the Chesapeake Bay and other areas. And I guess I'm really curious as to why this exact place as opposed to going outside of the Milford Haven area.
Well, Mr. Wade has one lease in the Penanga Tank so far up the salt is low. And so that site doesn't work. And then Mr. Wade has all his other leases are in the York. This packing facility is here in Gwynns Island, and that's why we want to operate from that in these waters. The stuff in the York, there's no trajectory to his loading site is a tiny little strip by a bridge. And so while we're looking at the stuff in the York, it's the bottom isn't conducive, and it's not the right beginning spot for this business.
I can follow up. Does this have something to do also with FDA safety, Food and Drug Administration, as far as the rapidity from which the product can be harvested to the time it's basically?
Well, that's what I mean when I say safety.
What?
In warm weather months, we have very short windows that we're allowed to operate under.
I'm familiar.
So for that very reason, we love the idea that we're growing the oysters 500 feet from the place that we're going to land them because we know that they'll sit there for a month or two prior to harvest. That they'll be even the warm weather months, and we'll be able to pull it out, get it on the dock, get it under refrigeration in a very short time so that we minimize the risk of Vibrio.
Mr. Tankard, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In testimony that we heard on the protestants' behalf, we heard often about times about this being a choke point and also as a high dense use area for boaters and other people who use water, different crafts. Is that your depiction as well?
Well, I mean, I can understand how people there want to perceive it that way. We've been working in this water. I've been on the site looking at this area since May, and I see very little boat traffic. Now, everybody's opinion of that, is veritable.
Sure.
But I see absolutely no amount of boat traffic incompatible with what we're doing. It's not like the harbor at Annapolis or in Norfolk. There's not thousands of boats sitting there all the time. I suspect if you sat on shore and count, and again, I need to be very careful because everybody's going to have a different opinion, but you see one boat go by, or then you see another boat go by. It's not like there's 50 boats all trying to travel through one little spot at a time. And with respect to that choke point issue, I looked at that picture. I forget where the drawing is, but if you know, if we could go back to it, you would notice just to the east, you'd see there's two big shallow sandbars, shoals that come out that really create the choke point. And we're sort of behind that. This location was chosen very specifically to avoid navigation issues. And again, there's been lots of opinions said about that, and I respect that other people might disagree. Clearly, the federal and the state reviewers that have looked at it think that it doesn't create a navigation problem. But if we went back to that drawing, and I don't know how easy it is to do it here. Actually, the better drawing was the one where he had the three things laid out. If you look to the east, you'll see that the choke point isn't where we're at. We're behind a shoal that sticks out that you would naturally navigate around. That's where it got tight. That naturally sets up the travel lane through there, which naturally puts you south of where we are.
Further questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Ballard?
Would it be appropriate to ask a question of staff?
Absolutely. You can do, it's been making your decision. Sure is. And I presume this would be the staff that you would like.
Exactly.
Ben Stagg?
I'm concerned about looking at the movement of the sand and that what seems to be a very wide channel where this is being placed, that we don't know what's going to happen if that hook, I believe, to the south were to move in closer to this. And it creates even narrower of a choke point. What kind of safeguards do we have if this oyster farm is established and all of a sudden it does become a blockage of a channel?
Well, I think, as we noted in our permit condition requirements of suggestions that we would like to see conditions, the commission has the right to look at this at any point. Clearly, at 5 years, the applicant wants to continue to do it. You know, we could hold a new hearing at any time, or I think the commission could just take action. These start to constitute a real hazard to navigation of the main navigation area. We could require they be removed or relocated, unless council tells me something different.
Have we got that? Ms. Everett?
Follow up to that question. So is that condition 8? So the commission may elect to hold an additional public hearing. Is that where such a issue could be raised?
That's correct. I can answer that for you, but that's correct.
And 10.
And 10.
Yes. Number 8.
Further questions? Mr. Tankard?
Yes, sir. In your summary and recommendation, Mr. Stagg, you mentioned conflicts will continue to occur when such methods are requested in areas similar to Milford Haven that have both history of maritime activity and uses and development of adjoining lands for residential use. Could you just elaborate? Being from the Eastern Shore, it's sometimes hard for me to understand exactly what densities that you all deal with on the Western Shore. Okay.
Understood. I mean, So the quick answer is you're going to see me and Hank back here a lot because, and the purpose of that statement was, and I think you've heard it today, there's a different way to grow oysters now than historically they've been done.
Sure.
We have aquaculture methods, which include floats and cages. And with those, near shore, particularly in developed areas, this creates the issues you've heard today. And the only mechanism that's currently available to us is this permit application process or a lease process, both of which have a public interest review, and we get public interest comments, and we have to deal with them on a case-by-case basis. With the current laws and regulations, each application is somewhat unique. I mean, this one is different than the Rappahannock one. There were other reasons for the Rappahannock one being denied. It was SAV involved. And the density of the population, the use of the water. So all of those things factor with this new sort of method that does encumber the water column in a different way than traditional on-bottom aquaculture.
Right.
So that was sort of the purpose of that statement, to say you're going to continue to see these unless some new mechanism is come up with by us or the General Assembly to deal with these issues.
Yes.
Follow up, Mr. Tankerton, Mr. Zedrin.
What I'm trying to get a sense of, you know, this picture from 1946, I mean, is this what Milford Haven, and the word haven comes to mind, like we had the last one of the last applications, it was thoroughfare. I mean, is this a haven where there this kind of activity on the weekend all the time?
It's called Milford Haven for a reason, and I think one of the reasons it is a haven. Now, I would interpret that more to it's a haven for boats to go in a storm.
Sure, that's what I
thought. But you can't deny that this type of area is an area where there's going to be a lot of boating activity.
Okay.
And it's not going to diminish. It's going to increase. And the user conflict is real. We understand that here at the agency. These are very difficult decisions to a recommendation for these projects. That's why we're at a case-by-case basis. When we evaluated this one, we felt like it was out of the channel. It is over in a natural sort of sandbar area that people would normally avoid most navigation, except really small craft. But it is an impact, and people can see it. We'll be able to see it. So all of those things we've tried to factor. But this is the current method. I think if you look at the VIMS report, there's a really good paragraph at the end that kind of summarizes the modern techniques that are being used, and that this is the future of aquaculture in Virginia, and it's up to the commission to decide, you know, how we're gonna manage that.
Mr. Zedrin?
Do we have more applications of the same for, because you said most of that's leased already for oyster price, is that
yes.
correct?
Yes.
So do we have more applications behind this one for those other areas?
I don't have any current pending applications for floats in Milford Haven. I do have, if you look at this map, applications for leases here. Mr. Wade has actually applied to increase the size of his lease. So we do have some pending bottom lease applications in the Milford Haven. But I don't at the moment have, other than the SOPCOs, currently have a pending application for a couple of FLUPSIs, which you heard mentioned earlier today. They have a commercial facility here and grow orchards on their leases. They have applied for a couple of FLUPSIs at their pier, but not an array of cages like this. It's
further questions?
You may hear that one because it's sort of protested at the moment.
Further questions? Matters before the commission. Well, Mr. Zedrin?
Just a comment. First of all, I want to thank everybody for coming here today. And I think I can speak for everybody sitting on this board here. This is a real tough decision. And, you know, because everybody's right. You know, no matter, you know, the property owners, you know, they got the right to what they said. And we're trying to do something for the oyster industry up here, too. And it's a real tough decision, I think, for every one of us sitting on this board. And, you know, for me, I guess, you know, when you see how many people are in here and how many people are affected just by the people sitting here, not to mention the other people out there that didn't show up, and then you talk about public trust and things like that and that balance, you know, of how we're going to do this. And I think this is very important for us today because I think this is the beginning. This is the beginning of the next generation. And I can see, you know, places like this haven. It's a fantastic place because it's protected. They ain't going to worry about the storms, you know, washing their cages away and all this kind of stuff like you would in the Chesapeake Bay and that type of thing. But what the other side of that coin is since all these people have leased these bottoms over there, there is going to be the next applications for all of these cages. And then pretty soon, all those people out there, they can walk across the buoys or the floats and stuff like that because, and as an owner of a business, I can see that that's a really good area and that he should have that area and should make money and he's kind of the of a footprint of the next generation. And so it's very difficult for me. I don't know what I'm going to do yet, because I think both sides have got excellent opinions.
Mr. Ballard?
I agree wholeheartedly that this is a very tough decision. I do think it's important to keep in mind that we are reviewing this application and not future applications, and that none of our decisions are precedent-setting. At the same time, I view these floating aquaculture applications, floating cages, as a little bit different than our normal shell-on-bottom and bottom cages. I think they require a higher degree of scrutiny because we are excluding people from the top of the water, typically, when they're used, whereas the bottom of the water, there's very few recreational uses for. This requires a much higher degree of scrutiny. And in my mental framework, when I evaluate these, I tend to think, do the benefits of this location outweigh the detriments? And right now, I see a lot of detriments sitting in this room. And I've heard the applicants elaborate on a few benefits, but I really haven't heard that many benefits for why this specific location causing so much uproar and upheaval. And had I been convinced that there was more reason for exactly this location, I would probably look a little bit more favorably upon it. But that being said, I'm torn on this one. It's tough, and I'd like to hear everyone else's thoughts.
Mr. Tankard?
Yes, I agree with a lot of those sentiments. I think a couple things that struck me in testimony by the protestants to one spoke, Mr. Robinson, said Matthews has no industry. Another one, I didn't catch his name, I should have written it down. Matthews is in dire economic straits. I mean, this industry is good for Matthews. However, the protestants have spoken very clearly about their use of this area, and it is a large conflict. I wish there was a better resolution than this, but Mr. Ballard, I believe you're right. The scrutiny that we need to look at with regard to floating cages is different than the normal ground leases and on-bottom structures that we've seen in the past. And you are effectively walling off an area. And when you wall off an area that people use in such a fashion, as I believe testimony seemed to indicate, I think it's too great a price for the people in the area. That's my take.
Well, I can't make a motion, obviously, as chair. Only break ties. I think the lead-in to this whole, not just to the folks of Matthews, as I sit on the aquaculture work group that the governor assembled with the direction of the Secretary of Natural Resources. Regina Mobley yesterday, in the lead-in to the story that showed, and I believe it was Regina, the first thing she said was, "Not in my backyard." That is exactly what, if it wasn't Regina, it was the commentator that said, that was the lead-in, "Not in my backyard." And again, I certainly understand the concerns of all. There are so many varying degrees of what could be wrong with this. But I think until we as a public start grasping upon what might be right with these projects, and I know, I own waterfront property. I look out in my backyard. I do. And can I honestly say, because I'm in a small tributary, would I want to look at this? Initially, probably not. But I know, I asked him to get me a picture This is not in Virginia. This is a group of sailboats anchored all throughout a harbor. They're sailboats. One can say they're pieces of fiberglass with poles sticking up, and one could say, I don't like the way they look. It's not a whole lot different than what we're dealing with now. We really are going to have to form a mindset of how we're going to go down the road with these projects. Because in Virginia is not like the Gulf where you have unfettered access and you just put them up on the property and away you go and away from everybody else. Or maybe in the seaside of the Eastern Shore where nobody sees things and they're good places. But until we develop maybe a culture that it's one of more acceptance, and I'm not saying right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm just telling you that's where we are. These projects are going to continue to get protested in the same manner they're being protested now for the exact same reasons. And what we're doing, I think, a lot of times is losing sight of what good these projects can do for the ecology and the economy. There's a lot to be said for them. And, you know, last but not least, again, as I said, I can't vote. I can't make the motion. But if you've ever seen something that's been somewhere, laid there, and you're like, God, I don't like that. And then after a few days, you go by, and it's not as obtrusive as it was. And then after a while, it's not obtrusive anymore. I'm not so sure that something such as this may not pass that test. But I'm just saying at this juncture, there's going to have to be some type of change as far as the way we look at things. Or every time, like we said, every project that we have here will be coming in with the same protests for the same reasons. And I'm not saying that your protest, your reasons are wrong. I'm just saying that ultimately, if the aquaculture and the industry is going to survive in the Commonwealth of Virginia that's been here a long time, there's going to have to be some type of tolerance and mindset change. So with that, that's my comments. Mr. Zedrin?
I move we deny the application.
Motion made by Mr. Zedrin to deny. Is there a second? Is there a second? Is there a second to the motion? Motion fails for lack of a second. Motion or the matters before the commission.
This is not a motion. I just have another comment.
Dr. Neal.
I struggle with every single one of these lease applications we get. And one of my major struggles with it is the fact that in many cases we can't take back our decision. In this case, with the floating cage permit, I really appreciate the conditions that staff has come up with. This is a decision that if we do approve it, has to be looked at again in 5 years. This is not a permanent decision. This is a decision by these conditions. It's done in 5 years, and it has to be re-evaluated. And also in these conditions, it gives us the ability to take back, to reevaluate this thing at any time within that 5 year. And so, again, like with John and the others have said, this is a very difficult decision, and I still don't know. I've changed my mind 12 times listening to people already today.
That means it's been a good argument.
It is on both sides, I'm not going to lose. I really appreciate the fact that we are going to be forced to reevaluate this within 5 years at the very latest, and we can reevaluate it any time before. And so I guess that eases my level of angst a little.
Right. Comments? Ms. Everett.
I agree. This is a very challenging issue, and I feel for those who particularly will have their viewshed impacted and see this as a threat to potentially property values or recreation or use. I will say, though, that as Mr. Ballard had mentioned, we have to look at this with a high level of scrutiny, and there are several concerns our jobs are to evaluate. And I believe staff has done a really excellent job of addressing those concerns through this process, including for me, which were important, the bond for removal if there is failure, the first condition, the limited time frame, as Dr. Neal just mentioned, a revocation, particularly if there's, I believe, one of the conditions, if there is failure as well as in disrepair, the permit could be revoked or addressed. I'm just double checking here. also, too, I to Mr. Ballard's question about whether this particular lease is chosen, I do think for the food safety standards, it makes sense that it's in proximity to the packing, cleansing, and distribution access from the purveyor's dock. I also think that this area being historically maritime, we need to Commissioner Bowman's point, find acceptable areas for working waterfront as the seafood industry evolves. So there are watermen who can utilize shoreline and water access points and continue to make a living off that, which is obviously harder and harder as we go through time. I do think it is a jarring visual in the eye, particularly at first, but I appreciate the condensed footprint, and I think it also allows us to avoid underwater grasses, which has been a key concern of mine and others on this commission. And we've heard from the Coast Guard report that navigation is not determined to be an issue. So I would be in support of this application with the proposed conditions.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
Motion made by Ms. Everett to approve staff's recommendations. Is there a second to the motion? Is there a second to the motion?
All right, I'll second it.
Second by Dr. Neal. Further discussion on the motion to approve. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Two noes.
Abstain.
We need to call the roll. Get the sheet. Can you call the roll, please?
France?
He's absent.
Tanker?
Aye.
Zebrin?
No.
Neal?
Aye.
Ballard?
No.
Minor?
Abstain.
Lusk?
Abstain.
Everett?
Aye.
Bowman?
Aye.
Yes, 4, no, 2, 2 abstentions.
Motion passes. Thank you very much for your input and your argument. We'll be in recess for the next 30 minutes.